This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
We're going to save the majority of the politics, and there's plenty of it, for the 7 o'clock hour. Chuck Todd will be on at 6:40. I'm kind of embarrassed because last night I had an extra $400 million in cash sitting around, and I sent it to Iran, and they sent me four people, and I don't know what to do with them. They're staying at the house now.
Come on.
It kind of looks funny.
Hey.
It's not ransom. The Obama folks tried to explain that away yesterday, and I actually believe their explanation. It couldn't look more ridiculous, and if it smells like fish, it probably is fish. That's not even a cliche, but I like it. We'll kick it around after Chuck Todd in the 7 o'clock hour. John Kasich, governor of Ohio, who is not supporting Trump, as you probably know and should know, he will be on with us in the 9 o'clock hour. And Hochberg's on later yelling about stuff. Nick DiGilio in a few minutes. First at 6:10, welcome to the program. We invite you to text anytime at 312-981-7200. You can call in as well. Some people have said, why don't you put more callers on the air? Well, this is a sensitive political season, and I'd like to put you on the air, but I don't do a show where you yell at me and I yell at you, and I won't do a show like that. So there are times, plenty of times, where we put callers on the air, but this is not a caller-driven show, and it's not because I don't love you and appreciate your support. But I think what most of the public doesn't understand is less than 5% of the audience ever calls a radio show. And those 5%, like if you listen to sports talk radio, there are the same callers that call all the time. Well, there's a reason for that, because 9 out of 10 people are never going to call a radio show. They're never going to call a TV show. They're just not. They're not inclined to be on the air. They don't want to throw it out there. They don't want to be the center of attention. And they can let their opinions be known other ways, which is why we do so many text message things, because that way you can write me. And you're a very funny audience. I'm saying this collectively, obviously. This is the smartest, funniest audience I've ever worked for. And that's why texts are an easier avenue. But for those of you, and I shouldn't say a lot, a handful of texts. Handful of texts that said, how come you don't put callers on the air over the last few days? And it could be the same person. But that's the brief explanation. I have no interest in doing a back and forth. You hate Trump. Yes, I do. You hate Hillary. Well, I hate what she stands for, or I shouldn't say what she stands for. I hate the fact that she lies constantly. You hate the libertarians. No, actually, I like them. And they, by the way, did a nice job last night in their CNN town hall. But I am considering this. At some point between now, watch Sandberg's head explode, between now and maybe even Labor Day, is doing a caller show.
Oh, yeah.
No, don't get so excited. I said I'm considering it. Doing a caller show where we allow callers to come on and express their opinions on this S show that we call Campaign 2016. Now, the difficulty for me would be not being involved in that, because I'd probably have to call in sick that day. But to do it would maybe serve a purpose, and that people would jump in and say their thing. But the thing is, again, I feel like we need to serve 100% of the audience, not the 5% that call the show.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a calm discussion, I think.
Oh, sure it would. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen any sort of quantitative statistics about how many people text a show. But just common sense says that, if you want to communicate with me, you're more likely to text than you are to call.
Yeah.
And if you have my cell phone, call me.
And that number is?
Well, I'll give it out. It starts with a 6.
Remember,
I'll give the numbers out one at a time throughout the show. You can put them together later. But that's my thought. Sandberg, do you have any thoughts on the caller show? Because your head didn't explode, and I was pleased to note that.
Well, I'm going to say that we're not going to hand out prizes that day, because I can't do that much administrative work.
No, they wouldn't be prize-driven. They would be opinion-driven.
You have a tendency to give prizes to every person that
I like the listeners.
I'm going to put my foot down on that one.
Can't we get like 200 free oil changes from our friends at Cassidy Tire and Service Center, family-owned and operated since 1914 at CassidyTire.com, or something like that?
We maybe could, but I don't see. Maybe, you can do it on the day I'm off for my wedding.
Well, are you taking a honeymoon?
Every day of my life after getting married to Pat Boyle is going to be a honeymoon.
Hold on a second. Where's my gag?
Yeah.
Where's my gag?
That
bucket?
Came out of Mary's
Let
mouth?
Me get my boots. Hold on.
I am not taking an immediate trip, but I will be off on the day I get married and then the Monday following, to recuperate from the big day.
How many, or how long have you lived together, you two?
Ooh.
Is it 3 years?
Maybe 2.5. Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so 2.5 years in, I mean, could you be...
Oh, look, she loves you.
Could you be that excited about actually, you know, we're taking a honeymoon with this guy now?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh,
I
you
love
could.
Him. He's my favorite person.
Well, I'm sure you love him. You're marrying him. But, I mean,
yeah, yeah,
the idea of taking a honeymoon, is it still a honeymoon or is it just a trip?
As I said, everything we do after we get married is going to be a honeymoon.
That's really sweet and slightly sickening.
Yeah. You can dream.
That event, by the way, all the listeners, this is great because this is how full service this show is. It's August 12th, right?
My wedding is August 12th.
Yeah.
6 p.m. I'm sorry, you can't be there.
August 12th, Mary is marrying Pat Boyle from Comcast Sportsnet, which is great because she was considering marrying Kaplan, and that would have been a mess. So Mary's marrying Pat Boyle. And on that night, John DeCause and I and Mike...
Toomey.
How do I get up? Mike Toomey will be doing a stand-up show at a place called Bell Sal Banquets.
Yes. I love how you're looking
Any
at
other information
here.
We can provide you?
I'll put that link on Facebook for
put
those.
That link in my head.
Yeah.
Bell Sal Banquets out in Aurora on the 12th. But you're invited either. So if you're a listener, you can either go to Mary's wedding or you could come to my stand-up comedy show. You don't have to pay for Mary's wedding. We're going to give away some tickets to my show, but likely you're going to have to pay for the tickets to that. So I'm thinking Mary's wedding's cheaper. So we'll reveal Mary's wedding location, the time, and the menu at some point before the 12th.
Can Mary, we go to Mary's wedding?
Mary, what time am I supposed to be there again?
Oh, well.
What are you serving, mojitos and Cosmos?
Oh, he
no,
going to be our bartender.
Ring bearer.
Oh, the ring bearer.
Ring bearer. Wow, is that a frightening picture. And Nick DiGilio on the movies coming up, including a big sort of nasty fight. And what does the MPAA do? And why are they rating a movie with a whole lot of violence a PG-13? You know about this Suicide Squad thing?
No, I thought you were going to talk about the bad mom story where they were forced to take the kids out.
No, no, I don't know about that. But Suicide Squad got a PG-13, apparently. Maybe originally or when it got them. Is it an R now? I don't know. Anyway, Mike Birbiglia and Judd Apatow are all over that. This is Judd Apatow, he of the raunchy humor king of the last few years.
What to see, what's out at the show, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GM's Cochran show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night. DiGiulio, he knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Nick DiGiulio, live from, I don't know, your house probably, right?
Yes.
Hi, buddy. How are you?
All right, man. How are you?
Doing fine. What is this Suicide Squad controversy?
Well, it's not so much a controversy, but I mean, well, there are two stories about Suicide Squad. That's the new DC comic book movie that's coming out this weekend. The one story is that the critics have demolished this movie. Mm-hmm. People who have seen it already have demolished it. And so all the fanboys are calling for all the critics' reviews to be pulled from Rotten Tomatoes, claiming that they're being paid to trash DC movies. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
Which is really...
And good luck with that. And what's the second story?
The second story involves the MPAA ratings board, who, you know, are... It's been around for years, obviously, and is one of the most consistent things in the world. Like, you'll see a movie that's rated PG-13, and it's filled with all kinds of crazy stuff, and then a movie that's rated R that shouldn't have been rated R, and vice versa. And sometimes something is rated PG that isn't appropriate for kids. It's wildly inconsistent and has been since it started in the 60s. And the controversy here is that this film, Suicide Squad, is got itself a PG-13, and it is filled with killings. There's machine gun murders. There's bombings. There's all kind of very dark things in it. And there's this just mayhem and violence and murder pretty much through the entire running time. So Mike Birbiglia, who is stand-up comedian, a writer, and a director filmmaker, whose movie I've been praising for the past week, is called Don't Think Twice. He went to Twitter and, you know, said, you know, it's ridiculous that Suicide Squad, which is filled with all these murders and killings, gets a PG-13, but my movie gets an R rating because some adults smoke pot and swear a few times.
Oh, he's right. Completely right.
He's absolutely right. Absolutely right.
And what has the MPAA said, if anything?
They haven't really responded. They never do. Do we
even know who the MPAA is? It's like a Wizard of Oz thing. Do we know who these people are?
Let me recommend a movie for you guys to see. Kirby Dick is first of all, it's a funny sounding name, but it's also a really good documentary filmmaker, and he has had issues with his movies getting NC-17s or getting X's from this board. So he made a movie called This Film Is Not Yet Rated.
I remember that. I never saw it, but I remember the movie.
It's about the ratings board, and he like sends people undercover to find out who is actually seeing these movies. Now, what happens is a group of just different people who are members of this MPAA board see a movie. There's usually like five of them. They sit in a screen room, they watch a movie, and then they decide, based upon the content, what this movie should be rated. And then if it, you know, you submit it, it gets like an X or an NC. Well, X doesn't exist anymore. It gets an NC-17 for maybe too much sex, or maybe too much violence. Then the filmmaker cuts it, resubmits it to five different people, not the same people, five different people. They watch it, and if they deem it's too much sex and too much violence or whatever, then they give it an NC-17, and it's repeated over and over again. Now, the weird thing is, basically, the studios own the MPAA, and if you don't release a movie with an MPAA rating, lots of newspapers and lots of television stations and networks will not advertise it. So it's like box office death. If you release a movie unrated, it won't play in as many theaters because a lot of theater chains won't show movies that are unrated.
Right.
If you get an NC-17 rating, which is a regular MPAA rating, you're most likely not to get advertising in newspapers and not to get advertising online because it's rated NC-17. So it's like this monopoly. It's this political thing where the studios own the MPAA. They can rate the movies the way they want to rate them. And if they want box office for a movie like Suicide Squad, they'll give a movie like Suicide Squad that should be R-rated a PG-13 just so it makes money for the studios.
Well, I'd say we should get Congress involved, but the country coming apart at the seams, apparently. Maybe this is something we take up next year. Before we bring up something else, give me your review of Suicide Squad.
I've not seen it, and I'm not going to be able to see it until next week because I've got an insane weekend coming up. But everybody I know who's seen it, I thought it was terrible and just like incomprehensible. And I guess some people think the only good thing in the movie is Jared Leto as Joker. I don't know. And I hear, but every single person I know who has seen it, every colleague of mine who has seen it, said it was terrible.
Andre, you had a question about Bad Moms?
So, yeah, Nick, did you hear the Bad Mom story? There was a group of moms in Florida, and they went to go see the new movie with Mila Kunis, Bad Moms, and they were thrown out because they said they were thrown out because they were breastfeeding their kids. But the movie theater said, no one allowed. It's an R-rated movie, so nobody under 17, 16 is allowed in.
So did they use this as an excuse to bounce the babies?
I don't know. Yeah, they said you have to leave. Now, these are infants.
Right,
so it's
but
just
they
a
are
weird...
under 16.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the story. Nick, do you?
No, I haven't heard that story. But, if the movie's rated R, but again, it's an infant. That's, you know, but you shouldn't bring babies to a movie anyway.
Right.
I mean, you just shouldn't. I hate it when people bring babies to movies. It's like, if you can't afford a babysitter, then don't go out. Don't go to the movie.
Or grown-ups that act like babies. Are we getting anywhere with the technology to block cell phone signals in theaters, or is that a whole got to make a law thing too?
You know, that's actually it's interesting because there are a lot of this is pretty unbelievable. There are certain artists, and I'm trying to remember exactly who was the first one who made precedent on this. There are certain artists, musicians, who and stand-up comedians, in fact, Steve, and I can't remember who's behind this. There's a movement, and it's going to happen, where it'll block people from being able to video anything.
Yeah, well, they're stealing material.
Yeah, and that's actually happening right now, and there are a lot of performers who are 100% behind it because so many people go to concerts, and all you see are people holding up their damn cell phones and instead of, like, you know, watching the show that's in front of them. Like, there's this thing that's happening live in front of them,
right?
And yet they're watching it through their stupid phone.
Well, that's how that's completely outrageous. But I'm also referring to the idea of people texting and calling their friends while the movie's going on, like they're watching it at their house. And it would seem to me that the technology exists to have theater blocking of those signals that simply forces you to, if you have to use your phone, to get up and go out in the lobby.
Yeah, it does exist, and I don't, you know, and I wish it would. I wish they would put it into action. I know a lot of people would, you know, would say, no, that's, you know, infringing on my rights. No, if you can't...
No, you have no right to use your phone during a movie.
If you can't turn your phone off for 2 hours, you need help.
Yeah.
Seriously. Come on. I mean,
Hey, I need you to stay up a little later tomorrow.
You do?
Yeah, we need you on the show tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Why?
Well, we'll tell you off here.
Okay, man.
Sandberg will pick it up and bring you the details.
All right? I got you, brother. All right.
Hold the line.
Is it his birthday?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
You better find out.
It's a treat.
Mike Birbiglia will be on the show tomorrow for Don't Think Twice.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. It's coming up on 6:30, and we will come back with your big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
First of all, the candidate is in control of his campaign. That's number one. And I'm in control of doing the things that he wants me to do in the campaign. The turmoil, this is another Clinton narrative that's being put out there and that the media is picking up on. In the last week, we've just announced our 50 state chairman in the states. We've announced a record amount of money that we raised in July. So the campaign is in very good shape.
The campaign is doing really well. It's never been so well united. As we started on June 16th, I would say right now it's the best in terms of being united that it's been since we began.
That's a condescending Elvis impersonator Paul Manafort and the next president of Jupiter, Donald Trump. See the headlines in the last 24 hours? Trump is getting nuttier and nuttier. Campaign operative unloads on his irrational candidate. Trump's descent into madness. Seven totally unhinged moments of the past 24 hours, and on it goes. Chuck Todd, the leader of Meet the Press and NBC political guru and our friend. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Steve.
How real is this that behind the scenes it's gone off the rails?
Well, it's real that it's gone off, that it's... Actually, I'll use what Henry Barber, who's the nephew of Haley Barber, who has been sort of a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, Trump supporter or apologist or whatever you want to call it. He goes, well, I'm still hoping Trump can do well, and you know, but he's not driving on pavement right now. He's in the ditch. And it was just sort of like, when these are your supporters, that's when you know it's a rough time. Look, there is realism in what, you know, what can you do to change Trump? You can't change him. What you can hope to do is somehow motivate him to focus in another direction. And I think that's, you know, what totally party leaders are realistic. They know they can't get him to like run, be focused and disciplined for 3 months, but if they can get him to stop attacking fellow Republicans, they feel like that would be a start. And I think ultimately that's about the only thing they could really hope to get out of any intervention.
Well, somebody brought this up yesterday that just is sort of getting engaged in the process and said, well, give me three or four things that, you know, I ought to, you know, do a little research on. And I said, the list is daily. Every 24 hours, the news cycle flips because he gives you something else that you have to chase and have to talk about, because the list gets longer and longer of insane rantings from the Republican candidate. Now, Chuck, I got to tell you, it just feels like, you know, he's in the express lane. He's in the seven kooky things or less thing, and he's got to get them all in 24 hours. So why, since the conventions, does he seem like he's doing more of this?
I think the one theory of the case that I heard is that the new people tried too hard to rein him in. They tried too hard to control him, and he's made it clear, stop telling me what interviews I can and can't do. He ultimately believes that what's always been best for Trump is he can talk his way out of anything. That ultimately, in some form or another, whether it's at a rally, an interview with me, an interview with the Washington Post, whatever, that he can always talk his way out of things. And obviously with Trump, the problem for Trump is that he's sort of like a political squirrel. he notices everything. He responds to everything. So when you sit down to an interview, like any normal person doing an interview is going to ask him about the like three or four recent things he said or didn't say. And Trump always has to get the last word.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's, you know, it's not that, you know, people say, oh, God, he's so unfocused. No, actually, the focus is exactly the same. He's the same person he was on June 15th when he rolled down that escalator in 2015 as he is today.
Yep.
Why Republicans thought he was going to change and pivot and be presidential, okay, but there was nothing about his past performance that was indicative of that behavior.
Right.
Chuck, do you put any stock into the fact that his own running mate broke bad on him with Mike Pence saying yesterday, I strongly support Paul Ryan, strongly endorse John McCain?
Yeah, I do, because it's, look, he's a man. Trump's a man on an island, okay? I mean, I think the only people that want Trump to lose more than Hillary Clinton and Democrats are many leaders of the Republican Party. You know, I think, you know, Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, their nightmare is that somehow Trump wins. And they have to work with this guy for 4 years and have to deal with this for 4 years. And, you know, they know, you know, Democrats have 300 House seats in 2018 after 2 years of Trump and Ryan fighting each other. You know, and some it could get, like, so bizarre and bad. So, look, I think the party is totally – but they don't know how to walk away from Trump. I think part of them think ignore him, and it's every Republican for yourself. You know, don't unendorse him, but don't work with him either, and just let him fester on his own. I think they think that's the best, most survivable path forward. But boy, that's not a successful path forward.
No, that's a minefield. Can you see any scenario where between now, because it's got to happen soon, between now and September 1st, where he's not the candidate?
I couldn't believe the number of conversations I had yesterday with people I consider to be, you know, smart operatives in the
right.
Republican Party, who brought up this, well, maybe we can convince him to get out. Maybe we can convince him to get out. And I'm sitting there going, okay. And I know this has been the pipe dream of every Republican that's been running against Trump for a year and a half now, and many other operatives. The guy is not a quitter, I think. I think we all, that's one thing, you know, when his own personality and his own legacy is on the line, he's not going to quit. Now, if you find him an exit ramp that allows him to declare some form of victory, sure. But I think we're past that. I think that, you know, I think that exit's gone.
Yeah, and I would go back to what's he going home to? Because he's burned so many business bridges now, he's got to go back and repair that as well.
No, and I actually think he wants to, you know, if he can just stabilize and get to it, I truly think he would view this presidential run a success if his son one day becomes mayor of New York City. Like, you know, then he's like, I did this and I created a legacy, and the Trump name lives on, and the Trump name will now live on in American politics. Like, I think that ultimately that's how he would view success on this, is if it allowed it so that it made his kids viable political players.
And in the meantime, every day matters. There's still over 90 days, but every day matters that you miss the opportunity to punch your opponent, and he misses opportunity after opportunity. Now,
this could be Hillary Clinton's worst 6 days.
Absolutely.
This could easily have been a terrible 6 days for her. Not just sort of an average 6 days, a horrendous 6 days. And, you know, let's just talk about foreign policy. We're doing airstrikes in Libya because ISIS is there. Why are they there? Because of a botched intervention. And who was in favor of that intervention? Hillary Clinton.
Right.
I mean, this could be among the worst moments for her. But Trump is, you know, that disastrous of a candidate.
The Iran money transfer thing. I mean, this comes down to bad optics. And isn't it possible that common sense seems to indicate to me that in the conversation, the Iranians went, yeah, we're not all that concerned about your optics. We're going to give you these people back. But once you send the money, and then we'll send them home. You can call it ransom, you can call it whatever you want. But this is how it's going to go down. Isn't that possible?
It's one. I thought there was a good quote today in the Post of one of these the think tank analysts on this deal. If you didn't like the Iran deal, you think it's a ransom. If you like the Iran deal, you say it's the price of doing business and diplomacy with an adversary /, you know, with somebody that you deal with diplomatically as an adversary. And that's the bottom line here. If you think the Iranians are so distrustful
right,
and are truly an enemy, then this is disastrous. If you think you have to tolerate Iran in the Middle East and know that no matter what, they're always going to be a player, which is sort of the Obama and Clinton worldview on this, then this is the price of doing business. This was money that did belong to them. We froze it for 30-odd years, and this was all part of that negotiation. But, boy, I tell you, it does look bad, and it's clear the administration was embarrassed, right? You don't go through the cloak and dagger aspect of it. You don't hide it if they're not embarrassed that the timing looks so bad.
Yeah, just hammering
it. And that's the part of this that you just like, this is what creates distrust in government. I was reading this story. I'm like, come on, guys.
Right.
All right. Just tell us the raw truth. Don't try to hide it. And they were trying to hide this because they knew the optics looked bad. And it's like, now you just made it look worse.
Well, they said it was a 30-year-old debt, too, that they were paying off.
It's true. But that is all true.
Yeah.
But the timing with the Iranians, you realize they had some leverage. And they're like, hey, we want our money.
Right.
You know what? This might be a good time to give us that money.
Right.
So it's just be forthcoming about it.
And by the way, Hillary, nowhere near the deal in January, but all over the Libya thing, and both were missed, other than a couple of cursory remarks by Trump yesterday.
Right. No, and I mean, and never mind, did we talk about the stagnant economic growth data coming out of the second,
yeah.
Second quarter that happened on Friday, the day after the Democratic convention, the day after the Democrats, you know, it's funny. Trump painted, I think, too dark of a picture of America, and there are times where the Democrats painted too rosy of a picture of America.
Yep. Yeah, truth's in the middle. Chuck Todd, listen, NBC invented must-watch TV back in the 90s. I'm telling you, and Chuck knows I'm not kidding about this. Must-watch NBC, that's Sunday mornings with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press.
Thank you, brother.
Getting it done. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate your time.
You got it.
That's Chuck Todd running off to do the Today Show now. Chasing after rainbows. $6.55.
No chocolate melts in your mouth. Not in your hand.
I never step on stuff. I apologize. But yeah, it's candy time. We'll get to the candy story in a second. I do want to remind you, this is show number 706. I thought the mayor was coming in today. Is that tomorrow? Is that next week?
That's today. He'll be on the phone with us today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep, in the 8 o'clock hour.
All right. So Mayor Rahm Emanuel coming up after 8 o'clock. Amongst other things, I mentioned this yesterday at the end of the show. Pat Brady's here. Pat, I'm going to ask you to join us early. Did you ever, Pat, hide candy from your kids so you could eat it?
Oh, yeah, all the time. The peanut butter cups?
Yeah. Now, you have a secret hiding place?
Yeah, a couple.
Okay, yeah. When the kids are little, you just put it in a high cupboard.
Yeah. Where's this going here?
Mary Sandberg.
I'm sorry.
Mary Sandberg. Mary Sandberg has been hiding candy from her kids for how long? 2 years?
Yes, I've known them for 2 years. Well,
and it's
it'll
Starburst?
Be 3 years, September 1st. Starburst in particular. I'm a huge fan of Starburst, and it turns out so are they.
Yeah.
Well, how many can you get in your mouth at once?
Well, I only eat them individually.
You got a favorite?
I do yellow, which
yellow.
Works out because nobody else ever wants yellow.
Yeah,
so
yellow, no.
Yeah. Orange is
you
my
like
second
yellow?
Flavor.
I love yellow.
This is creeping me out, Mary. I do the same thing with Starburst, and I have them in my purse all the time, and yellow is my favorite.
I kind of like to suck on them.
Well, I just eat them.
Well, you just made Nick's show.
prior to meeting the kids, I was an adult who lived by myself, and I would buy the big sack of Starburst because I like to have them around, and I'd eat a few every day. Well, once I moved in and the kids are at our house, because we have them part-time, I would have these sacks around, but kids have no regulator on how much they just eat till all of them
sure.
are gone.
Sure.
So
well,
I
you might do two or three at a time and make your Starburst last for a week.
A sack, yeah. It could last a week, whatever. Because there's like 40 or 60 pieces in there. And so I started buying them, and I hide them so then that the kids don't know that I have them. And then I wrap the wrappers when I eat them in paper towel before I put them in the trash so
because
they can't see the
guilty.
Wrappers. Right, because they would see the wrappers sometimes and they'd be like, who's eating Starburst? Where are the Starbursts?
I do that with my beer cans.
The kids won't know daddy's drinking at night.
Dad's drinking their beer.
But with Starburst, because the shelf life of Starburst, I think, is 112 years.
Mm-hmm. They still make them. I haven't had them.
Oh, sure, yeah.
No, they get hard.
Do you put them somewhere?
That's why
you just made Nick's show. do you put them somewhere and forget they're there?
Oh, no, I don't forget.
Okay. Because I could see you putting Starburst in the couch cushions and then, you know, 6 months later going, oh, look, a yellow one.
No, I am. And our snack area is like one of those corner cabinets that's a Lazy Susan, and it's the lower one because Pat has asked me to put our snacks lower because he's tall and he doesn't want the snacks to be at his eye level because then he'll just eat them. And so this is like diet prevention type stuff.
Sounds like a fun house.
Yeah, right.
So the snacks, I also only buy chips in individual bags now because it's portion control for him. So whatever.
Hey, if it works for Pat, it's fine.
But it's two levels. So the snacks are on the top level of the bottom cabinet. So I hide my Starburst on the second level on the bottom.
Does Pat know they're down there?
No.
All right. So
nobody goes down there because it's where the
toaster is. Just made Nick's show again.
This sounds like a nightmare just living at your house.
I know. You think I'm so strict.
A lot of rules.
So at this point, because I know the kids are big talk radio fans, their friends are going to tell them and they're going to, you know, have a big conversation today about where the Starburst are and you're going to need a new hiding place. But my question to you
is listening to Eric and Kathy.
Yeah, they probably are. What's the text question? Is the text question, where do you hide your candy from the kids? Or is the question, do you hide stuff from your kids?
Yeah, and I feel bad about it.
Do you hide stuff from your kids? And do you feel guilty about it? What are you hiding? Yeah. You know, I hide my meth. You know, I spend a lot of time in the meth lab, and I hide it from the kids because it's safe. Text us 312-981-7200. That's the number. All right. Thank you, Sandberg. And we'll continue to make a list of rules to live with Mary. Sandberg. And Vandeville, I bet you got a lot of rules at your house, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. Not like Sandberg. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, Commandant. Commandant Vandeveld.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
So the truth is, I tell people, you don't like me, but you have no choice. You have to go for me. I'm sorry. And they'll say, we don't like you, but we have to go for you. But most people like me, which is very nice.
What? I think it should be another Trump campaign slogan. Should just say Trump Pence, and then underneath it, you just go, what? Pat Brady's here. Pat, what's your company's name?
Next Generation Strategies.
And I know you help people with, like, struggling with a Rubik's Cube, and they don't know how to get all the colors on one side. What else do you do?
Anything that requires deep thinking. Government affairs.
Eric Edelstein's here. What's your company?
Trump what? No.
Don't do that. Trump what?
Trump what?
Yeah. Trump Pence. What?
AL Media.
And AL Media does what?
Try to stop Trump.
What do you do that actually takes effort?
We do electoral campaigns for Democratic candidates around the country.
All right. Now, both of you, I'd like you both to think, in your past, have you ever seen a self-destructive candidate that even approaches this level of self-destruction?
Alan Keyes.
I was just going to say Alan Keyes.
Or how about Ryan, who was the... not Paul Ryan.
Jack
Ryan.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, that way he got it from outside. That was.
Yeah. I don't think he would have talked about the sex clubs if they hadn't actually come out. But Alan Keyes, remind people who Alan Keyes was. There
he was Jack Ryan's replacement. Actually, if you go back to the beginning, that's why we have President Obama. Jack Ryan won the primary. No, he didn't win the primary. Sorry, but he had some issues and didn't win the primary. We had to bring Alan.
Who did win
the primary? No, I don't even remember.
Jack Ryan was cruising along, had a nice little bump in the polls, and then one day a story comes out that his very attractive sci-fi Star Trek actress, it was ex-wife, I guess, at that point, Jeri Ryan, said that he used to be a little bit abusive emotionally, and he took me to sex clubs, and I probably shouldn't have gone, but I went against my will because he liked that sort of thing. Next thing you know, he was out.
I think he did win the primary.
He did win. And then Alan, they brought Alan Keyes in, and it didn't go very well.
No, I think he lost by 40.
Yeah. Well, he never even lived here.
No, he got a post office box.
He's in Maryland.
There was a house. There was some row house that that the Republicans rented for him or something, and he never saw it.
Well, think about President Obama's path, too, because four or five people in that primary, and Blair Hull blew up.
Right.
And Dan Hines, I think, was the front runner to start with. President Obama wins, then the Republican side blows up. He becomes president, and now he's never been above 50% pretty much his whole presidency. We put Trump up, and Obama looks pretty good by comparison. So he's had a good – he's got a lucky star.
Yeah, well, and we've told the story before, but I also make the argument that if Orion Samuelson had chosen to run, then he would have made it competitive as well.
Yeah.
Because he was prior to Alan Keyes.
You'd never get through a State of the Union address, though.
With Orion?
Yeah.
Well, you know, he would because... You're talking about the applause breaks.
Yeah, exactly.
Orion! All right, so we have had a past 5-6 days since the end of the DNC. Like, nothing I've ever seen.
Well, you know, they say that once the conventions happen, the whole world's kind of paying attention. It's the moment for the nominees to make their best case to the widest audience possible. And if Trump's trying to lose this election, he's done a masterful job at doing that. I mean, it's been a disastrous 6 days. Some would say it's been a disastrous 48 hours for this guy. And how do you pick the stories to choose from on the things that he's done to just alienate the very voters he needs to get? Those moderate, suburban, white Republicans that the Meg Whitmans and the Kinzingers and some of these people that are now coming out publicly and saying they're not for him, that's disastrous.
Did Hillary Clinton hire a new PR type group? Because we were talking about this morning. Her commercials are fantastic. They're just so everything at the DNC with the videos and the montages and, you know, when they took the comedic breaks with Trump and how they put that together. It's brilliant.
Yeah. No, they had a professional producer put the DNC, the convention on, somebody who produced Emmys, Super Bowl halftime shows, all that kind of stuff. But it's the same group running her campaign.
With the kids watching. That's
really run by Jim Margolis, who was in charge of, under Axelrod, the advertising for Obama in 08 and 12. So this is a group that's won national campaigns before. They know what they're doing. They're not winging it. They have a plan. They have a strategy. And obviously, with a guy like Trump, he makes it easy.
I mean, what's their Twitter program? Because I think that seems to be a Trump campaign.
But here's the thing. Trump had big fundraising numbers.
He did.
And big run fundraising numbers from folks in a direct mail campaign. So once you take out the cost of direct mail, how much money he actually has to spend is unclear.
But that's a joint. That's a RNC fundraising with the campaign.
You know who got one of the direct mail solicitations?
Did you get one?
Yeah.
What was your response?
You know, I haven't sent a check yet. I'm still in the consideration phase. I don't know if you've heard the show. But
you're not there yet.
I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But the fact is, Trump is raising money. There are 14 million people out there, as he'd like to tell you, that would support him. So is there any chance he's going to go away because either he wants to go away in his head or whatever? I don't see it.
No.
And by the way, it's got to happen in the next 2 weeks.
But the bad thing for Republicans in general, this would have been a great week to go on the attack on Secretary Clinton and the president. Some of the things we're seeing in Iran and some of the other issues that are out there, but he sucks all the air out of the room, and we don't get to hear anything about it. So this is, I think...
Well, how about we have renewed airstrikes in Libya?
Yeah.
Now, you could take either side on Libya.
How about dropping $400 million to get the hostages from Iran?
Yeah, but you can make the... You know, that's...
No, that goes against our policy for about 40 years.
I agree with that. But optically, it's bad for Hillary. She was nowhere near that in January. She'd been out for 3 years when that deal went down. So you could trace it back and say it all started with her conversations. But much more damaging to her is the fact that we're back in Libya, and Libya's a mess, and he could make a story about that and talk about ISIS, and none of that happens because he's arguing with a family that lost a son in war. So if you're Paul Ryan, or if you're anybody, if you're Reince Priebus, for crying out loud, how have you not run him down with your own car?
Reince, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, did react yesterday. I know he and Paul Ryan are close. I think he ran his first congressional campaign. But I think as Republicans, we got to focus on Mark Kirk and Bob Dole and some of the down-ticket races, or we're going to hand everything over to Hill and Bill. And I don't think it's going to be the Clintons that were after they lost in 94. I think she's going to take it as far as she can to the left. And I think Republicans and like-minded independents should be very wary of that.
I just, and again, I know it sounds like partisan sniping, but I would hope if it were happening on our side, there'd be more principled stands like Pat Brady took, like Kinzinger took, where people would say, this is just country before party, and we may lose and my career may be over, but I can't abide this guy.
I got to look myself in the mirror.
I mean, the problem they have now, Steve, is I think it looks totally opportunistic at this point to jump off the wagon. It's like, oh, the Khan thing was the final straw when he called women fat pigs or wanted to bar Muslims or called Mexicans rapist or the 400 other things. Those weren't enough, but now you're rescinding. It just seems political at this point. And, you know, for Ryan and McCain to some extent to wait till after their primaries to then denounce and say they're not doing it, that's going to look political too. So they're in a real trick bag, I think.
I don't know how Ryan does it. I don't know how Ryan, because Paul Ryan, and look, I wouldn't want to be in Paul Ryan's position, because you actually have to control the House. You have larger concerns than just your individual candidacy. And you've got to back the lunatic at the top of the ticket, my word, the lunatic at the top of the ticket for as long as you can, even while he is at least throwing stones at you.
Well, I had a member of the National Committee demand my resignation from the Republican Party during the convention because I wouldn't support Trump. But our nominee, Trump, won't support Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House.
Right.
So the hypocrisy in some of the support for Trump, let alone the fact he's not a Republican on virtually every issue, from free trade to tax policy to health care, I don't get it. But it's doing a lot of damage to the party. So I really plead with Republicans. We got to focus on these other races that are going to keep us to have some control of the government.
Yeah, but even over and above, and I know we do, this is a politics discussion here, but over and above and beyond politics, when we come back, I want to talk about what Joe Scarborough brought up on MSNBC yesterday. Because I'm not one of these people that walks around and goes, well, you can't trust Trump with the nuclear codes. I don't think Donald Trump is so self-preserving. I don't think he would ever go to that level. But maybe I'm wrong based on a conversation that Scarborough brought up yesterday, because it's frightening on the surface.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I have to follow up with that with it, and I'll be very careful here. Several months ago, a foreign policy expert on the international level went to advise Donald Trump, and three times he asked about the use of nuclear weapons. Three times he asked at one point, if we have them, why can't we use them? That's one of the reasons why he just doesn't have foreign policy experts around.
Trump asked three times.
Three times in an hour briefing. Why can't we use nuclear weapons?
I think everybody understands why you can't use nuclear weapons. The whole point of nuclear weapons' existence is that nobody ever uses them. There cannot be a level of lack of understanding. That's not cute. That's not funny. And it's stunning that a 70-year-old man who has lived in this country does not have a basic level of understanding and would even ask that question. There is no first-shot nuclear war. If we shoot first, everything calms down. This is 1945. Too many countries have them. Too many nuts have them. And even the fact that the commander-in-chief would have that in his head would cause other countries to possibly go rogue and be closer to the trigger. It's outrageous.
Let me put it even more starkly. I think the last 60 years, where there has not been a war between first world powers as a function of nuclear deterrence. And deterrence means you're deterring people from using them, which means you cannot have them as a tactical first strike option. The whole point is anyone, even a rogue actor, who thinks that they could use one knows that the retaliation would be massive and immediate from the United States. Once you start saying we're going to use them offensively or tactically, you then allow every other player to say, oh, how about us? We can too. And that's where the world, if it isn't already coming apart, is in a really, really dangerous place.
Yeah. Everybody that's paid any attention at all to politics or national security or foreign policy understands that concept. Except the guy that's the nominee for the Republicans. But and I'm just trying to help Republicans, Senator Kirk, credit for pointing this out a long time ago. He's not competent to be commander-in-chief.
But that's, again, I never thought it would get to that level. And this is not Donald Trump going, let's just shoot him now. This is Donald Trump saying, well, that's one of my options, right? No, it's absolutely
There was an online piece from a Republican who used to be in the military, who used to be the guy underground who had the keys if the commander-in-chief gave the order. And he gave a really profound description of it could be your first true civil military constitutional crisis in this country, because those kids sitting underground who have those keys, the whole point of that mission is understanding you have a reasonable commander-in-chief who will only give that order if it's in the absolute national security interest of the country.
Dr. Strangelove.
Right. But to know that there's this unstable guy sitting there and you may be asked to put that key in there to create a launch is a really...
With that question in your head, because you've lived through campaign 2016 and now the guy is the commander in chief.
That's right.
And did he make the decision because it's the right decision? But you're sitting underground and in the back of your mind, you saw the news stories.
That's right. You saw the news stories. You say, did you know, the head of North Korea write a bad tweet about him? And are we now possibly on the verge of nuclear annihilation?
It's not riveting. It's not fascinating. It's frightening.
It is. You know,
it's a difference.
We've been saying for a long time, it is frightening. And during the primaries, we're saying, you have to focus because this is what this is all about. And we put this guy this close to being commander in chief. It is frightening to the democracy, I think.
And it comes back to the same thing again and again. Hillary Clinton's got a lot to answer for. And those questions aren't being answered because they're not being asked. Because all of this discussion that goes on is about why Trump's not just off the rails. What did Haley Barbour's kid say? He's not on the pavement now.
He's not on the pavement anymore.
Right, not on the pavement anymore. He's not on the pavement anymore. He's in the ditch. Newt Gingrich went after him yesterday. Ugh, a mess. 7:29. And don't think the rest of the world isn't watching, because of course they are.
Did you see the press conference with the guy from leader from Singapore? The questions that were being asked about the impact on global trade in the United States economy. Watch that, and you see how scary and how much attention the world is paying to this, and how truly detrimental this will be to global markets.
How unprecedented for a press. I mean, I don't think Obama relished standing in the White House, basically saying the man who's the Republican Party nominee is unfit to hold this office.
If you watch that press conference too, which I did, Obama, the president, eviscerated him, and just line by line by line. I don't think he did enjoy it, but he went line by line on why this guy should not be commander.
No, I can tell you right now that Bush won, regardless of his physical problems. His mental acuity, by all accounts, is still there. Bush, too. And Clinton and Obama, the three previous, current, and Jimmy Carter. Nobody's more frightened than they are because they know what the job is. They're the only people on the planet that know what the job is. And I guarantee you that they're talking at home to their wives and their family going, this can't happen.
There's another aspect. I don't know if we have time right now, but I think is a scary prospect also, beyond the election, on what's likely to happen, which
right,
I'm
pick
concerned
it up.
About.
Let's pick it up in a couple minutes. 7:31, we'll come back. Big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Wasted vote is voting for somebody that you don't believe in. And if we're going to continue to vote for the lesser of two evils, that's still evil.
Governor Welk?
Well, as Gary likes to say, you know, we have no problem with people casting a wasted vote. If we get in the debates, we're going to win this whole thing. If you want to waste your vote on Trump or Clinton, be our guest.
But I mean, you both talked about your displeasure with the Trump campaign. If at the end of the day, you pull away enough Clinton votes to actually give the presidency to Donald Trump, would that be okay with you, Governor?
You know, at this point, that's pure speculation. And, you know, we believe in ourselves and our ticket, and we're voting libertarian.
Gary Johnson and William Weld will be back on this show soon. They were in studio, I don't know, a week or so ago. And they were doing a CNN town hall last night.
How high was Gary when he was here?
It'd be nice.
A couple doobies and some Doritos.
He likes the edibles, I think.
Like those Doritos.
The edibles,
oh, yeah.
The edibles.
He said he gave it up for the campaign, so he's a man of ethics.
You two want to make fun of these guys?
It's too bad because Bill Weld. Actually, Governor Johnson was a pretty good governor.
No, they're both very, yeah. very both, compelling
honestly,
guys.
They're both really they compelling guys.
I don't mean to pick on them.
And if the ticket were reversed, the Libertarians would want it that way. But if the ticket were reversed with Weld at the top, you'd see Republicans flocking to those guys.
The Green Party candidate, I think her name is
Jill Stein.
Yeah. I saw an ad yesterday on CNN. It was very good.
Yeah.
If you don't like either of these two, meaning Trump or Clinton, then here's your option. It was, I thought, a pretty effective ad.
Gary Johnson, William Weld.
Well.
Yeah, I was remembering Johnson, Gary Weld. Johnson. That didn't sound right. Gary Johnson, William Weld. Google either and check out their campaign website. The legitimate third option. Dr. Stein is really just 5% getting in the way right now.
Good ad, though.
Yeah.
You know, in a weird year, you never know.
Well, you got to get to 15. If you get to 15 and they're in the debates, there's the
they'll get to 15, I bet.
The Commission on Debates takes 5 polls, and the polls that change. And they average those polls, and it's coming up in about a week where they pick the final number. And you got to be at 15% by the time they do that average number, or you don't get in the 3 debates.
By the end of this week or next week?
I think it's the 15th or 16th.
Assuming there will be 3 debates.
Well, you know, you make a point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. 7:42. All right, Eric, you were about to make a point before the break.
Well, there's a tradition in this country, and frankly any democracy, that the outcome of an election is legitimate. And that everybody sort of accepts the outcome. There's a famous story from 1960 when Nixon won what at the time was the closest election in American history. I'm sorry, lost to Kennedy. And a lot of people in his camp wanted him to contest the outcome, particularly in Illinois and Texas, where, you know, history has shown there were some funny games going on. And Nixon, in that great American tradition, Richard Nixon,
right,
called President Eisenhower and said, I am not going to contest this. It's not good for the country for me to do this. Al Gore in 2000 after the Chad incident in Florida did a similar thing after he'd won the popular vote. I'm worried even if this guy loses by 10 million votes or more, he's going to suggest, as they already are, that it's rigged and the outcome's bad. And here's why that's so poisonous, because you have this conspiracy fringe. You have this alienation with institutions. Nobody believes anything. Everybody's a cynic. At worst, he's going to get 40 or 50 million votes. I mean, just by rolling out of bed. And so to run around and then say to your supporter, she's not the legitimate president, I think it's unbelievably damaging to our democracy. Unbelievably damaging.
I totally agree. And the damage gets layered on deeper and deeper every day. And that is a huge, huge problem once the election goes down, even if it's a blowout.
Right. Even if it's a blowout. When people are like, oh, come on, how could it be rigged? But this notion that things are these conspiracies and we're things are out of our control and there's this cabal that sort of pulls all the levers of things, it just feeds into that, and that's just corrosive to a democracy.
That's why I hate the MUD too, even within each individual party too. You know, the MUD is slinging everywhere, and then it's just hypocrisy on both sides when they come out and say, oh, well, you know what? We are now behind our candidate.
You know what we need to do, though, and back to Illinois on that, this fair map push to try to get the legislative independent maps to get it so it's not so partisan. Because when you get the conspiracy theorists in a national, and here, particularly here in Illinois, where the legislators choose who votes for them, you get hyper-partisanship, and that feeds right into that. And it just feeds and feeds and feeds. So we need to get a fair map.
Mapamendment.org.
Yeah, that I think that probably is the most significant thing we have going this state.
It's a huge deal, and it's a little tough for folks to understand unless you swim in it for a while. But the idea is every district ought to have a contested race. And because of the way the maps have been drawn, there's many districts where it's just one candidate running, and that's your only choice.
And in the primary, you can go far to the right or far to the left, and that's who you're trying to keep happy because that's who's going to vote for
you. Look, there's a lot of structural problems with our system right now. But
Democrats don't like that one.
No, but I'm fine with it. But going back to the earliest days of the Republic, you know, Hamilton's all the rage because of the play. But the hatred between Hamilton and Jefferson and Adams, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, they accepted the outcome. And they said, there's something bigger than us. As big as those guys' egos were, and they attacked each other. And there's a history of attacking. But then at the end of the day, saying, I lost, he or she won. You know, we have to move on as a democracy. Trump doesn't care about that. And I think that's damaging. That's really damaging.
Well, the difference between the two of them, the core difference between the two of them, based on your premise, and I agree with your premise, is Trump doesn't care, and he would say he doesn't care. Hillary would say she doesn't care, and she'd be lying. But at least she would say she doesn't care. It's 7:45. I want to come back and talk about Illinois in a second, and also Mayor Emanuel will join us about 8:20. It's LifeLock. $7.50, Steve Cochran. By the way, we're talking about hiding stuff from your kids. There's a couple of texters. My wife hides Fruity Pebbles in her closet. The kids steal it because I tip them off to where she's hiding it. Another texter says, we open a box of cookies from the bottom so it looks like the box is never open, and then the kids don't open it from the top. And here's a woman who hid chocolate in the vegetable bin in the refrigerator because she knows the kids will never go there.
That's smart.
Helpful hints. What are you hiding from your kids? Texters 312-981-7200. We have not focused on the state or the city. Mayor Emanuel's coming up in a little while. What's the impact on city business with the fact that the mayor's got to find ways to raise revenue, but this is big, big tax hits that are coming up? And are we going to see more of a rush of people to leave the city of Chicago?
I hope not, but those taxes do have an impact. When you get 10% sales tax, that does have an impact. You're going to go across the line to avoid it. So hopefully there'll be some compromise on some of these pensions that are out of control and we can't afford, and we won't have to raise taxes to fund them.
Yeah, and look, and some of the mayor's hands are tied on a lot of this stuff.
He's got to have money. You got to raise money to pay the bills.
Got to have money, and a lot of it was, you know, Mayor Daley kind of kicked this can down the road for a long time, and a little bit of this could have been done on an annual basis that would have made the ultimate pain a little worse. But until we have structural reform of all these pension systems and general funding, it's not going to change, and it leaves the mayor in a really tough position. And I think he clearly, as he said, doesn't want to have to go back to property taxpayers, so he's looking for other alternatives.
The hits that we're talking about that have already been issued in headline form, maybe the public hasn't connected to, but we always come back to the same beat your head against the wall argument with the pensions. They're not court challengeable because there's too many ways the laws have been written to protect the pensions from never being adjusted or whatever the actual verbiage is, whether it's state or locally. So how do you fix that problem?
The public sector unions in this state have too much power, and they control the Democrats, and Democrats control the legislative process, the speaker. They have too much power, and they're not willing to concede some of it. Senator Cullerton actually has come up with a plan that probably won't get through. There are ways to get it done, but they just won't do it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I disagree with that. I mean, I think that the fact of the matter is blaming it on working people who made all their payments out of every paycheck.
No, but
the time
the
politicians.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I think there's a difference. The difference is you're not blaming the members of the union. You're blaming the unions that run the members and are leading the members astray.
Well, the leaders are protecting their members.
Mm-hmm. The leaders are protecting themselves.
Made this payment. No, but look, I think most of the public sector union, they know there has to be some structural change. The question is everyone going to take a haircut, or is it just going to be union members taking it? I mean, you can't, and the way Rauner came in, structurally, he wanted to have pension reform and tax cuts to corporations. I mean, it doesn't make sense. If you're going to share pain, have everybody share it.
He threw a tax increase on the table, which is very much against what Republicans typically stand for. But
I don't want to turn this into Rauner sucks, Madigan sucks.
I'm not doing that either, but there's been no concessions on the there has been none.
And I've said this a million times here. The union members are entitled to every cent they've contributed. But you know what? I'm entitled to every cent of my 401k that I no longer have. We live in different times, and you have to be realistic. And for the union members' leaders not to go to the union members and go, we got to take 95 cents on a dollar now because it's going to be 85 cents 5 years from now or 2 years from now, that's bad leadership.
I think there's more of that going on than you think, Steve. And I think there is a willingness and an understanding both among the rank and file and the leadership that there has to be structural change. I think the principal position, though, is we shouldn't be the ones that are bearing the whole burden, that it needs to be shared across the state of Illinois.
Well, the taxpayers have been shared. We're getting creamed because of this and the interest payments we're paying on the debt, on the tax increases. And remember, this was
right.
Remember all these the tax increase we got under Governor Quinn was supposed to pay down past due bills, but all it did is go to make pension payments. So we need an honest discussion on what's going on. And listen, this is not the Democrats. The Democrats don't own this. The increase, the 3% COLA, that was a Republican deal, if I had my history right.
That's right.
So, they need to have a real mature adult discussion on where going forward, because it's just continuing to go into the train wreck.
Sad, because it's kind of run like my condo association.
Yeah, and if you've ever been to a condo association meeting, you know that's a headache. we do have to stop living in the past. We do have to stop going, well, if the Democrats did this or if the Republicans did that, and realize that it starts today. What are you going to do today to fix it? And if you can't get it through a court challenge, then figure out a way to get it through a court challenge. Because if you're not working together, it's just going to continue to crash and burn. I can't believe people aren't more sick of seeing statistics that say Illinois is 50th in this and 49th in that. This is too great a state and too great a city to be in that position.
Look out the window where we're sitting. I think this is the greatest city in the world.
So do I.
Why are we dealing with this? But I'm not saying that to be hyper-partisan, but there has to be some concessions from the unions on some of the stuff.
There has to be concessions on all sides, and it needs to be a grand compromise. I just think in this current poisoned atmosphere, whoever is to blame, we're doing a kumbaya show today, so we won't point fingers. But the fact
that we're going to blame people on other shows.
We'll blame people on other shows.
Yeah.
But there has to be adults in a room and getting it done. But everybody has to give a little bit.
Before kumbaya, I have to ask you, Dick Durbin made a big stink at the DNC. I know it was the day that you took off and the day I got there, but about Governor Rauner just ripping Governor Rauner when he was at the platform at the delegation breakfast and then to reporters after, and we pressed him, will you run for governor? And no, I'm focused on this race right now, electing Hillary. Will you run for governor? Well, I'm not going to say anything right now about that.
Is he going to run?
I think the fact that he's kept it open, I mean, Durbin is not the kind of guy that just teases offices like some people who we've seen over the years that just will put their name up for anything. That's not what he does. And I think the fact that he's left the door open says to me that he is actually considering it. Now, whether he ultimately does it or not, I don't know. I do know a lot of Democrats feel like he would be a terrific candidate against Rauner, and there's a feeling that particularly going into a redistricting year, which is a whole other conversation, the next governor will help write the map for the next legislative and congressional districts.
Unless we get the changes we need.
Unless you get the changes you need. Right. But for that reason,
mapamendment.org.
For that reason and a bunch of other ones, the stakes in the 2018 governor's election are huge. And I think there are Democrats who feel like Durbin would be a terrific candidate.
For the first time in a long time, we finally have a governor that represents the taxpayers. And so I will be fully supportive of Governor Rauner. I think he's going to win again.
Well, and I'm a fan of both. I'm a fan of Runner and a fan of Senator Durbin as well. But does this have anything to do with the fact that Harry Reid, one of the five worst people of the last 25 years, stabbed Durbin in the back when he elevated Chuck Schumer to a position that Durbin should have had?
Well, there is this leadership fight that will happen after November, depending on, obviously, is the Senate in Democratic control? Is it Republican control? Does Durbin keep his number two spot? Does Patty Murray get it? So there's all kinds of palace intrigue that I think will go into Durbin's career decisions. But I do think Durbin, as somebody who loves the state of Illinois, is extremely concerned on the direction that Runner's led it and believes that somebody strong has to run and we have to beat him.
Good to see you both. And follow you on Twitter where?
Adel64.
Pat_Brady. Thank you.
Nice to see both of you. A couple minutes before 8. Back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah,
live from Channel 9 Studios in tropical, what part of town are you in?
I would say the northwest side of Chicago. I'd call it...
what neighborhood is that, though?
Roscoe Village.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
North
Albany,
Center.
Albany Parky.
North Center?
North Center.
Mm-hmm. From Lincoln tropical Square. North Center on the edge of Roscoe Village. Oh, man, what a travel brochure that
pretty
sounds
nice.
Like.
We're right next door to a McDonald's.
Hey, Mayor Emanuel is going to join us in about 10 minutes, so if you'd like to stick around for that, that'd be great.
I'd love to.
Sure, cool. Cirque du Soleil, any good?
Worst Cirque du Soleil show I've ever seen.
So it's Cirque du Soleil crappé? You can see it on the poster. I should have known.
The show is called Taruk, The First Flight. And you've seen these Cirque du Soleil shows. Normally very beautiful and full of imagination and whimsy and grace. This one is based on the characters and the creatures that we saw in James Cameron's Avatar movie from a couple of years ago that was a huge box office winner. But just because it did well at the box office doesn't mean that a show is going to translate into a live arena show. Part of the problem is most of the dialogue that is spoken in the show, Steve, is in the Avatar language of Na'vi. So unless you speak Na'vi, I know you are a man of many tongues.
I got the Rosetta Stone Na'vi tapes.
Yeah, I know you. I know your tongue goes many directions like mm-hmm. that. But what? For most of us, well, you didn't know what was going on. They did have a narrator that would occasionally jump in and kind of explain things a little bit. But really, the bigger problem with this was that the usual things that you expect in a Cirque du Soleil show are not there. The funny clowns, the thoughtful moments, the gymnasts, the acrobats, the circus elements are pushed aside for this unengaging Na'vi storyline. That is seems like all style and no substance. They incorporate a lot of multimedia effects into the show, projecting images on the wall that I think makes the show seem very sterile. When I go see a live show, I want to see a live show. I don't want to see images projected on a wall unless Steve is doing his shadow puppet show,
which
again,
everybody loves,
which is always a hit.
Yeah,
this show winds up being kind of. Like a little bit of a pretentious, esoteric storytelling over entertaining the audience in a way that people are used to from Cirque du Soleil. Costumes are very, very pretty. The setting is very colorful. It's very Lion King-like, so much so that you feel like kind of been there, done that. But the main thing is that the originality, the thoughtfulness, the humanity that you normally see in a Cirque du Soleil show is not there this time. So... this is the first time ever I am not recommending a Cirque du Soleil show.
By the way, you can go to learnnavi.org, learnnavi.org, and spend 6-8 hours there before you go to the show
if you want
to.
That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
The other thing that's different with the show is that they encourage you to download their app on your phone before you sit down. so you can be interactive. It'll make the show more interactive with you and your phone while you're doing it. So you've got, you know, an arena full of dopes like me with the phone, you know, trying to put the app in at the last minute. And now you've got an arena full of people fiddling around with their phones instead of watching the show.
It's just a bad idea all over.
And here's the interactivity of it. During certain moments of the show, it tells you to hold your phone up, and you think you're going to see something cool. And all it does is flash colors on your phone. So as you look around the arena, you're seeing other dopes like you with their phones holding their phones up with colors. I mean, it's not really, I get it, yeah, technically it's interactivity, but who cares?
Yeah, it's goofy.
And you're goofing around with your phone instead of watching the show. So that was another thing that I didn't like. You want to hear my celebrity sighting from last night?
Sure, who was that?
Seated just a couple of rows behind me was Lady Gaga's ex, Taylor Kinney from Chicago Fire.
Just sitting there crying by himself?
He saw the weird Cirque du Soleil costumes, and it reminded him of happier times. There was a whole contingent, it seemed like, of Chicago Fire people, you know, from the TV show, sitting near me, who were not there after intermission.
Wow, so they bailed.
So a lot of people bailed.
Though, right, Dean?
I'm guessing that's probably
either that or it sucked. Cirque du Soleil.
You can look for future episodes of Chicago Fire to be in all Navi.
Yeah. So remember, it's Cirque du Soleil. What did I call it before?
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, crepe. Mm-hmm. Any of those fit. Ozzy Osbourne has a sex problem. Sharon! Bradley Cooper in the news, and Tyson Beckford, who I'm often confused for.
Very handsome actor. I can understand that.
Yeah, and they're all in the news. We'll get to that coming up. More with Dean and Mayor Emanuel coming up. Dean Richards standing by. Dean, we'll come back to Ozzy. Sharon! And other things in just a second, but Mayor Emanuel is going to join us here. And I believe he's right there. Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
Hey. I'm great. How are you?
Doing fine. And I understand the long-awaited bike ride may finally be happening. We'll get to that. But congratulations. Congratulations. What's that?
Well, I would just say that, you know, General Patton stopped the surge in the Battle of the Bulge quicker than we scheduled this bike ride.
But we have been trying. I mean, Mayor Emanuel has a busy schedule, so, you know, we're working it out. It'll be this month.
Don't dump on Mayor Emanuel's schedule, okay? I'm sitting on top of the bike right now, man. I got my bike shorts, you know.
We've let him down again and again.
I got him.
He was over at East Bank waiting for me to swim because he refuses to accept I can't swim at 6 a.m. All right, so
hey,
listen.
Steve,
yes,
Steve,
sir.
Steve, you can't swim from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., brother.
You know what? He's not lying. He's not lying.
I don't think it has to do with the time of day, Steve. Just saying, brother.
Yeah, but it's a nice rationalization on my part.
Yeah. That's good. Stick with it. It's working for you.
All right, so we have a location for the library. Tell people where and how it came down.
It's the Presidential Library, Jackson Park. It's going to be right next to the Museum of Science and Industry. It's also, you know, obviously not far from the DeSalvo Museum. And it enriches, I think, the entire city. This is a great thing for the city. It's, you know, anywhere from three-quarters of a billion to $1 billion investment that will create thousands of jobs, bring people from around the world and around the country to come see our beautiful city and see, obviously, the 8 years of President Obama's presidency. And I think, I remember that Columbia College in New York was competing for it, and I said it can be anywhere in Chicago. It just cannot be on the Upper West Side of New York, in Manhattan.
Right.
And I think the president, you know, people look at, and every planning, there's a reason museums and libraries come in clusters. Is, you know, that's where you create kind of all the foot traffic. And so you look at the Museum of Science and Industry, you look at DeSalvo, you look at the University of Chicago, where he taught. It's a natural fit. Now we're going to make sure, as, through a series of other investments in the bridges we're doing over Lakeshore Drive and the Bronzeville and Kenwood community, you know, first ever suspension bridge in the city is going to open up on 35th Street in a couple weeks. We have a new L station on 55th and Starfield. We're doing new athletic centers. That this is going to be a catalyst that spurs other investments and strengthening of the neighborhood and community and the economic opportunity there.
And I love your comments yesterday, too, Mayor, how even though Jackson Park is the new site, Washington Park isn't being forgotten. That's still going to be a much focused area.
In fact, I'm going to be in the area Sunday with a major investment in athletics. And, you know, let me just, if I can, we're talking about the economic, cultural, and educational opportunity. Totally makes sense. But take a step back. And, in a time of questions about divisions in the United States, about all our differences, we're about as a city to remember the 50-year anniversary of Dr. King's march in Marquette Park.
Yep.
Where he then walked back and said, was taken aback about the segregation, the sense of hatred he saw eye to eye here in Chicago as compared to what he thought was the feelings of the South. And the same is history. We're about to celebrate, not celebrate, but memorialize and remember Dr. King's march in Marquette Park. And yet, on that same kind of anniversary, we're announcing the Presidential Library, the first African-American president in America's history. And it does remind you, as what Dr. King used to say, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. And to think that this city, a city that Dr. King, after his march in Marquette Park, made comments about Chicago's racial divide, also is a city that produced President Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, and we are noting it with the announcement of a new presidential library on the South Side. And I think it's that historic coming together of two events that I think I draw as we try to build one Chicago and in a period of time where people are focused more on the divisions because they don't know each other. I think we should take stock that at a period of time when we saw divisions, that history brought itself full circle to a place where the city of Chicago produced a great first couple who are making a historic decision about their city to build another generation of people that can dream. I see these two moments as heads and tails of a journey America walked, and it walked through Chicago. I think it's a great opportunity for us and a great way to step back and remember, even in some of the hardest times you're facing, some of the biggest challenges, what can happen.
Well, what's possible. And here's the thing, at a time when we're so good,
go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to say, at a time when we're so good at picking out the bad news, you got to stop down and realize progress, success, and things like that as well. So, yeah, I agree with you.
I will say this. If you, one of the things, we have so much more, and this is kind of echoes the big national debate. We do have differences, and they should be celebrated. I come from a Jewish heritage. My grandfather came to this country 100 years ago from Eastern Europe fleeing the pogroms. I'm proud of my heritage, but I'm proud of the city that welcomed my grandfather. And to think in this city, in two generations, an immigrant from Moldova, Eastern Europe, his grandson can be the mayor.
Yeah,
there is more that brings us together than divides us.
Well,
and one of the things I think we need to... go ahead.
I was just going to say, you want to talk about immigrants, and you want to talk about... Listen, I got one on the phone. Dean Richards, the world-famous Dean Richards from Channel 9, comes from a long family of Greek criminals.
No,
and,
no.
Wait, is that...
Hey, you know what, Steve? Before you start trashing on me, if it wasn't for my people...
Our people, Dean.
Our people, Andrea. There would not be a sandwich or burger served in this city.
Well, that's fair.
That's right, baby.
That's fair.
You wouldn't say flaming cheese? Forget it. Flaming cheese invented in the city of Chicago? Forget it. Wouldn't have happened without our people.
Yeah. Mayor, that's where I'm taking you for lunch after our bike ride. We're going to Greektown.
Well, we can go to Greektown. I have a couple favorites now. It's one of in Greektown. And I do love flaming cheese. You know, when my kids used to swim over at UIC on the swim team, they'd be done, and so we did every Sunday we did an early dinner, 4 o'clock in Greektown. It's definitely great food. You just don't want to see your cardiologist afterwards. That's all I'm gonna say.
I would like to see him start serving flaming cheese in city council during. You know, if things aren't going well, you start the opas with the cheese a little bit. That's that'll start changing people's minds.
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things flaming. Jesus is not one of the items.
There we go. All right, we got like a minute here before we let you go. And I've brought this up many times on the air. And I don't like when politicians go, I inherited this, I inherited that. And I don't think you've done that.
Okay.
But you inherited a mess. You inherited a mess, and you got to pay a lot of bills. And there's a lot of revenue that needs to be generated in this city. So whether it's property taxes or whatever, nobody wants it, obviously. What do you say to people who just want to bang on the mayor's office for the amount of revenue that has to be raised?
I have flaming cheese for you, is what I said. No, have some sakonaki with me. Look, I don't believe, and I don't accept actually the narrative in the media. So let me say this: it's not one person's fault. The past labor leaders were not honest with their members. A lot of elected officials were in this. I think it's scapegoating to say that person over there is responsible. A lot of people were in on it. I would also say the media, the seeds of this problem were created, they didn't raise any issues. Everybody looked the other way. And by the time it became so big, you know, the seeds of this problem became so big, then everybody wanted to scramble, who do we blame? So here's my thing. It was created in the past. That is a fact. The question to us isn't was it created in the past. What are we going to do to solve it? And I'm not into naming one person. I don't think that's the right thing because it's not also honest. A lot of people were in on the what I would say is a scam, which is we never told employees if you want these benefits, you got to pay 11.5%, not 8.5%.
Right.
So for the first time, we're going to be honest. If you want this benefit, here's the price for the benefit. We also have to say to the public, we made this commitment. The Constitution is what the Constitution is. This is what it's going to cost you. And ultimately, I believe, you know, we are the number one city for corporate relocation in the United States 3 years in a row. Like ConAgra, West Omaha, bringing 800 jobs in the world headquarters here. GE had their healthcare world headquarters leave London, come to Chicago. We're the number one city for foreign investment. Not one, not two, 4 years in a row. Because people see the city of Chicago finally solving their problem. Now we have solved the police pension. We have solved the fire pension now. We have solved the laborers' pension problem. This is the final one. I know it's tough. I don't take it lightly. But if we don't do this, the companies that used to flee that are now returning and growing the jobs, growing the economy, will say that city's not ready to embrace its future, not ready to shape it. Because I'll just tell you, Steve, denial is not a long-term strategy. So we have to get the economy out of the pension penalty box, solve the problem. And if we don't do this, that pension will take the entire economy down the job creation. And worse, we will have to be facing and telling neighborhoods and communities, you know what? We should do garbage collection once a week. We're going to go to every other week.
Yeah.
Tree trimming, which is now, forget that. We're going to have to start cutting back basic neighborhood services to make this payment. And I don't believe that's right. Now, the first year, it goes up $4 and a little more than $4.40, $4.50 a month. Additionally, then the following year, it goes up 7%, about the same amount. And I don't take it lightly, but, you know, Kennedy had this great quote, to govern is to choose. Now, I can even let the train of denial that existed for decades keep rolling and see what it does to the economy and jobs, or arrest this problem, solve it, and have a stronger foundation that builds on the best educated workforce in the United States, the best higher education system in the United States, the best aviation system in the United States, the most modern public transportation system in the United States, the best new technology and burgeoning texting. There's only three cities in the United States, north of 50 million visitors, New York, Orlando, and the city of Chicago, creating thousands of jobs. And now with the presidential library, that's just going to keep growing. We can be on that road, or we can be on the road that, you know, with this pension overhang that it was left for us to fix, that starts to actually pull down not just the pension promise that we made to our employees, but starts to pull the rest of the economy.
Yeah, and I know everybody listening certainly let you know what they think. You got to continue to let the people in Springfield know what do you think, and because this is what you said, this is a two party problem, and you can't live in the past. You got to live in the present. You got to go, what can we do starting today, not who screwed up last week or the week before.
Well, given you have a family friendly show, I really don't think it's appropriate for me to tell Springfield what I think.
Actually, you know what? It could be fun for me. All right, hold the line, Mr. Mayor. We got to see if Andrea's bike shorts are ready.
Thanks, Mayor.
That's Mayor Rahm Emanuel at 8:33. All right, you got to tell me the Ozzy story. I miss the Ozzy story. Can you hang on a second?
Yeah.
All right, hang on a second. Yeah, we'll come back with a big story as well on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Brian Dempster standing by. We'll get to him in just a second, but we want to remind people that it's Duck Derby time, and our pal Nick's outside. Remember Nick from last year?
Hi, Nick. There he is.
Nick.
That's my
Nick.
Guy.
Nick is unbelievable. Nick is always a rock star, and Nick's hanging around outside, and Allie's here in studio. Woo-hoo. Allie's our new buddy. And we love Nick. We love Allie. And Allie and the Duck Derby are on. And Duck Derby man, what is your name?
Dave Breen.
And what do you do?
President of Special Olympics Illinois.
Thank you for all that work.
Thank you.
Appreciate and thank you for
on.
Nick. And
like,
for Allie.
He's like the athletes. It's a spirit and personality, I tell you.
What drew you to the business?
The athletes, you know, just they're motivating. They impact all of our lives more than we impact theirs. So it's been a great vocation.
Yeah, there's truth in that. Right. And Allie, tell everybody what sports you participate in again.
I participate in volleyball, track and fields, baseball, basketball, and gymnastics.
And Nick, what are your sports? I forgot. What sports do you do?
Basketball, swimming, golf. Gotcha. Hey, I just got a medal again.
What'd you get the medal for?
Me and my friend Eric did golf for You're fine.
Golf medal. Nicely done, buddy. How about a hand for Nick, right?
Yeah.
So, Allie, you had big shoes to fill when you took over this year as the Duck Derby ambassador, but what an honor, huh?
Yes.
And what does that mean on the day? What happens during Duck Derby? Do you start the race?
Yes, and I get to pick the winning duck out of the water, and I give speeches, and I go to interviews, and I sell the rubber duckies, and it's a lot of fun.
And we've all bought quack packs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have.
Give us the levels of ducks that we can buy here.
Okay.
Well, either one of you guys?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's one for five or six for 25, 24 for 100, and then for those big ticket items, the 240 ducks for $1,000.
That's great. And the Darling Ducklings is your team?
Yes.
All right, so there's a pull-down menu.
Yep,
I say this like I did it right.
Yeah.
There's a pull-down menu.
Maybe we should explain this, Steve.
Yeah, why don't you, Dave, go ahead.
Andrea and I both did this.
Yeah, why don't you did it. Yeah, we just
you
did
have it.
It
in front of you,
I
don't
do,
you?
Yeah. You go to duckrace.com and chicagoduckrace.com, chicagoduckrace.com, and then you have to scroll down a little bit because there's all the corporate sponsors up at the top, but you can go down to Darling Ducklings because that's Allie's team,
mm-hmm.
and you can buy a duck, buy a quack pack. It's just easier to buy a couple of quack packs, $25, you're all in. We'll buy some for Nick, too, and get those ducks, win some prizes, raise some money.
And when is the event?
It's today. Actually, starting at 10 a.m., it's a family-friendly festival over at, in front of the Wrigley Building. And then they're going to do the splashdown at 1 o'clock off the Columbus Drive Bridge. And then Allie, she said, is going to pick the winner, and they're going to get a 2016 Chevy Malibu from Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers.
Thanks to all those guys.
Yeah.
I happen to know a little bit about them. They're great folks, all the Chevy dealers. And Allie, thanks for your help. And you and Nick are phenomenal athletes, but you're also just good people, and that's probably more important.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me today.
Of course. And I forgot, is there someone you wanted to say hi to? I don't want to miss the opportunity to have you say hi to your friends.
I want to say hi to my Aunt Tracy and my friend Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say hi to my brother, Adam. I love you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Cool. Yeah.
Nick, what about you? You want to say hi to somebody, Nick? Who do you want to say hi to?
My dad.
Your dad. Listen, you guys are phenomenal. I got brothers. I got dads. Yeah, buddy.
Guess what?
What, Nick?
I just graduated.
Hey! Yeah. Phenomenal. You know what, Nick? When you come out of your shell, just like I told you last year. Great seeing you, buddy. And Allie, congratulations. I know it's going to be a long day, but it's going to be a great day.
Well, thank you very much.
And keep contributing. How can we do it again?
You can go to ChicagoDuckRace.com, and the Darling Ducklings have sold 14,000 ducks, so they're our number one team. So thanks for all your support, and thanks for having us.
And what I'm going to do, since I somehow screwed it up and Allie didn't get credit, is go buy more ducks now.
Yeah, go, you have to.
Okay?
You have to.
I'm doubling my ducks. Allie, good luck.
Thank you so much, and thank you for supporting the Special Olympics.
Thank you for participating, and thank you for being here. Thanks to all you guys.
Ryan Dempster.
There's a 1-1 to Freeman. Oh, he caught it! Right into the palm of Dempster's glove.
Ooh,
that is a little smile there from Dempster.
What would Harry say right now about this win?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a lot of champagne in here. I haven't seen this much champagne since my wedding. We had a party just like this. It was phenomenal. Go Cubs!
That was outstanding.
8:53. Ryan Dempster, from one great athlete to another, from Allie from the Special Olympics to Ryan Dempster. I'm going to tell you, Demps, I've been a fan for years, but I don't like your chances against Allie. I think she wins every time.
Yeah, I think right there that'll just push me even further into retirement after face off against somebody like that in any kind of athletic competition. What an awesome thing. I'm glad to wake up this morning and hear you guys talking about that and supporting that, and it's just a tremendous thing out there.
Well, and you know what it's like to go through any sort of struggle with your kid, and to have the Special Olympics be so uplifting and so moving and so tremendous year after year after year. And these kids, all they do is smile and have fun and, you know, try to have a good day every day. So we ought to be inspired by that.
No, absolutely. And you're seeing, you know, we've changed for such the good in the world as far as what we do for kids with any kind of learning disabilities, physical disabilities, to enable them to try and do the same things that other, you know, normal functioning kids are doing. And I think it's so awesome, you know, not just, I mean, the Special Olympics, and you see these fields that are built. There's one over on the corner of Irving Park in California, a handicap accessible field where the kids get out there and play baseball. And it's so awesome what they're doing.
Yeah, it's all about opportunity. You know, to have the opportunity to maximize your life as a kid, and whatever is holding you back shouldn't be holding you back in 2016. So good for the adults who got behind that field and every other place we're getting it done. All right, let me ask you about this Cubs team. Does the routine change now that we're into the dog days on a daily basis for the pitchers or the position players?
No, I think what happens now is you start to really get ramped up for the stretch run and get yourself in the best possible position to succeed as you push towards the postseason. You know, you get that break before the All-Star break and then into the All-Star break, and then coming out, we had the luxury of an extra day for some starters. We got a couple off days coming up here, and that's a chance to really get that rest, take advantage of it, and then, you know, down the stretch in September and into October, you got to be ding, ding, ding. Here we go. The bell's ringing, and it's full bore ahead. But you see these guys, and they proved it over the beginning of the week, to sit there and have their resilience against the Marlins, to be down and never out. And that's what this team does, man. They're tenacious, and they will come after you any way possible, whether that's a big fly ball for a homer or that's a, you know, working a walk with the bases loaded, whatever they got to do, they'll do it. And you know, they had a big, huge series there.
Yeah, that's the thing, that they can do it so many ways, and they really had to grind it out yesterday in that ninth. And after leaving the tying runs in scoring position in the eighth inning, you're thinking, okay, this is going to be tough against the guy who's only blown one save all year. Thing about it, when you watch this team in the dugout, when they're coming back against Seattle Sunday night, yesterday against Miami, I didn't sense that these guys are uptight or tense, and yet I think 41,000 people in the ballpark are feeling the butterflies. Is that true, Ryan? I mean, are people able to, are the players able to just kind of go through this without letting the emotion just take over in that moment?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of what happens. So you have all these, you have this combination of youth and experience, and you have veterans and young guys. And when the young guys watch the veteran guys, how they act, how they carry themselves, how in the moments when things are intense or there's high-pressure situations, they look to them. I remember being a young guy, you look to the veteran guy. Is he freaking out? Is he breathing too hard? and you see a guy like John Lackey, a David Ross, a Ben Zobrist, these guys who've been in the, you know, the World Series, they've been in big playoff games, they've won the John Lester's. It's like, oh, they don't change anything. Okay, so how do I do that? And how do I mimic that? And you're really seeing it develop on the field that way. And, you know, I watched even a guy like Wilson Contreras in that bat that ended up being the wild pitch yesterday. Just a week earlier, there was a big situation. He swung and flailed at three pitches that weren't close to the strike zone. And here he comes up in a big situation, bases loaded, and the pitcher throws him a pitch right down the middle, and he takes it. And a lot of people be like, oh, swing at that. But it's the approach. It was the patience. And I know it seems funny. He could have drove that pitch, and he could have crushed it. He could have swung and missed it. He could have popped it up. Who knows? But the approach is what happens. Now, all of a sudden, the pitcher goes, well, this guy's not in a hurry. I don't know what to throw him next. Next thing you know, he throws a ball. Then he yanks a ball, and we win the game. So that constant reaffirmation from these guys to the younger guys of this is how we go about it. Let's not panic. And let's just go about our business and play it just like it's any other game of the year. And I think that just starts to pay huge dividends down the stretch. You know, the fans, I know the fans get on edge, but yesterday, man, and Joe Maddon said it right, that's hard. When you sit there and played all those games and you play in a big series like that and you're down and it's hot, you're getting ready to travel, and there's every reason in the world to just kind of roll over in that game and say, we already won the series. The fans helped us win that game yesterday by providing that energy, and hats off to them for that.
Well, there you go. And fans love hearing that. Wintrust Community Bank Hour. Hey, before I let you go, Sox do really nothing at the trade deadline. Should Sox fans read anything into that one way or another?
No, I think what happens is you have some incredible valuable assets in Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, even a guy like Todd Frazier. There's still, you know, the ability to get the most out of those guys if you're trading them, I think, didn't present itself. And I think they weren't willing to sell guys for less than they were worth, and they're going to hold on to them until they can do that and look towards 2017 and going out there and putting a team on the field that's capable of contending for a championship. And I think, you know, the thoughts of getting rid of those guys, yeah, it seems great, we can get a bunch, but at the same time, you got to be able to get what you want for them. If you don't, then you don't get rid of them.
It's Ryan Dempster, who's available for birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, and elective surgeries. I do all of his bookings. And
block parties, too.
Nice. Block party coordinator. I wonder what you've been doing with your days. Thanks, man. Appreciate the insight, as always, and hold the line.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Nine 9:13 in the morning. You know that hard and firm and fast rule I have about no novels on the show? I'm going to break it again right now because I'm a fan of Drew McGarry. Drew McGarry's new book is called The Hike. You might know Drew from Deadspin, but you should know him from The Hike and other books. And as always, I mean, get two copies. You're careless or you lose the first one, and then download three or four more because Drew's putting himself through trade school. Good morning, Drew. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, how's that?
I'm glad you broke the rules for me.
And aren't you pleased that I tried to get six copies sold to everyone who likes the book?
Yes, that's because you have to have multiple ones to stand on if you have to reach a light bulb and things like that.
I have to say, it is one of the best covers I've seen in a long time. It looks like a piece of artwork.
Thank you so much. It's very metal. Like, it appeals to the 80s metal fanboy in me, where I was like, oh, Iron Maiden type cover.
And a lot of very positive slugs from people who just love your work, which means you're either the leader of a cult or you're getting it done.
I prefer to be getting it done.
The hike, there's, you know, when you go to Blue Man Group and you come out of Blue Man Group and somebody goes, well, what was it? And you go, I don't know. I just know I had a good time. I read The Hike and I knew I had a good time, but I'm having trouble describing it to people.
I now have the pitch. I've done enough pimping now where I have the elevator pitch. I say it's the Odyssey, but with cursing.
and the cursing comes from a crustacean.
That's right, and there's a talking crab that swears a lot. So it's a little bonkers, but enough swearing to keep you grounded in the gritty reality of urban profanity.
Now, an idea for a book has to come from somewhere. Was this in the middle of the night where you were dreaming? Where did this come from?
No, the beginning of the book is all happened. I mean, until like stuff really starts going nuts. Like, I went to a hotel in the middle of Pennsylvania. And it was some wedding mill hotel, and I was the only guest. When you're the only guest at a hotel, it's very weird.
It's The Shining.
It's the shine. That's all right. It's the overlook. And there were no elevators, and like my room was all sort of musty and creepy. And I said to the clerk lady, I was like, there was like an old lady, and I said, is there a place where I can go for a walk? And she's like, no. No, not really. And I was like, what? Like, it's the Poconos. It's like an hour from New York. So I was like, whatever. I'll go out and I'll look for a place to walk anyway. And I walk, I don't know, 5 yards behind the hotel. And there's a path right there, like clearly marked. So either the lady just had no earthly idea and just had spent years and years oblivious to like what was like 5 feet away. Or like some odd god just put the path there for me.
Right.
And was going to test my will. And that's really where it started. That's where the genesis came from.
Now, the cursing crustacean, which I don't want to focus on, but it was one of my favorites. The cursing crustacean, where's that from? And who is that in your life? That's got to be somebody you know.
No, it's actually not. It's like an amalgam of all the people that I know that swear a lot, like Bills coach Rex Ryan and like a guy named Zodiac Mother. I actually can't say his name on the
right,
show.
Right.
I really caught myself there. I'm pretty proud of myself.
No, you did. You came very close, but you caught yourself.
I caught myself. Yeah. Just some other guys, like any of my favorite cursing people went into that. And then it was also a perfect match of character and animal. Because if it's a crab, he better be crabby.
And the other thing is, you write a book like this, you better have some juice with a publisher. Or you better have some juice with a literary agent. Because you bring this pitch to somebody who's trying to sell books in a tough time for publishing, and they're likely to throw you out of the office unless they know you can, as I said before, get it done.
Yeah, and I had good luck with the first novel I'd written. That was I've written three books before this, and the novel was the one that really did well. Mm-hmm. And so I was in a position where they were receptive to the idea of a second novel, and I, you know, all I wanted was to be able to finish one and figure out an idea that I could just finish. And the selling part after that, I tried to tell them was I tried to write the most entertaining thing I possibly could.
And the other thing about the hike is, because in a, you know how many times you've read a book, certainly you see a movie, you've read a book and you go, well, that ending sucked. I love your ending.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we are now in the age of, somebody wrote an article about it, how a lot of pulp culture now is don't mess it up. Like, it's you're sitting there in the theater waiting for them to mess it up and fearful that they'll mess it up. And if they don't mess it up, you're just relieved, you know? And, you know, I hope with this one, it's like you get to the end, it's really satisfying. You don't feel like you've been cheated, you know, or you don't feel like you've been sort of introduced to an 8-part volume series with cliffhanger after cliffhanger. And there's no confidence that they're going to get to the end. You want to be confident in the writer that they're taking you somewhere, that they're going to lead you somewhere good.
Drew, I like that. I love the fact that you write to the pop culture of today, almost kind of embracing the Pokemon, because we did. We had Dungeons and Dragons, like you say. We had Pac-Man. We had all those crazy things that we laugh about now but thought were so cool back then.
Yeah, and I have a huge affinity for like old crappy 8-bit video games like King's Quest and stuff like that. Anything where it was any of the buggy point and click games where you would have to go from one screen to another like 8 times for the magic bowl to appear by the rock, and just because the game was weird and annoying, and like the book should have that sort of feel to it, not directly referencing video games, but sort of echoing the feel of being in those weird old games.
By the way, have you downloaded Pokemon Go?
You know what? I downloaded it, and I played for a little bit, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to walk in front of a truck or down a manhole,
right,
and I'm gonna kill myself. And I just wanted to show it to my kid, and I shouldn't have showed it to the kid, because the kid just wants her own account. But by the time I tried to set up her account, they were like, well, there's a 10-year wait list.
Right. You'll never get it again. No. All right, before I let you go, again, it's called The Hike. It's Drew McGarry. And Drew does a ton of work on Deadspin and, of course, has the award-winning romantic column, Why Your Team Sucks. Have you done Why Your Team Sucks Bears 2016 yet?
Bears, I think, are Monday. So it's in the can, and then I have to go through all the fan emails, and I think it's Monday. I think today's the Bucks, tomorrow's the Giants, and then I think the Bears came next in the 2016 draft order.
Anything you want to tell us?
I mean, it's going to be a lot of Jay Cutler jokes, obviously. nothing but Jay Cutler and anti-vaxxer jokes.
You know what I like? I like the fact that he went easy. Why not? He just finished the hike. Please. Go get your copy of The Hike and enjoy it. And, you know, let me know what you think about it as well. I got no stake in this. Drew's not giving me any money.
No.
But the book was free. So go get The Hike and pay for it. At a fine book center near you, a book retailer near you, or download it, or get it, or steal it from a friend. I don't care. Just read The Hike. That's all I'm saying.
There's audiobooks for lazy people, too. So
there you go. Oh, very nice. All right, Drew, I appreciate you being on. Hold on a second. That's Drew McGarry. And it's weird and wacky and cool.
The Hike. It is. It's cool. And the book cover does look like a Dire Straits video, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And on Monday on Deadspin, Why Your Team Sucks 2016, the Chicago Bears. Okay? You know, you're familiar with the series?
No.
Yeah, you go through every team in the league. Yeah.
Is it really Why Your Team Sucks?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Bears don't suck, though, do they?
Well, considering that all 32 teams qualify.
They all suck. Okay.
Yeah, all teams suck. It's just the Patriots suck.
So the Packers.
Yeah, everybody sucks.
But they always suck. Yeah.
On this high-level educational, literary, academic note, we take a break and we come back. Governor John Kasich from Ohio. How much is he bothered by the Trump thing? Coming up on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
926. You know, I supported Governor Kasich throughout the primaries. And he's on the phone now. And one of the things he wants you to know is, you're a Republican in particular, or if you're an independent, there's, regardless how you feel about the top of the ticket, there's a lot of other races you could certainly support. And good morning, Governor Kasich. Welcome back to the program.
Great to be on. Those Cubs, huh? I mean, I cannot believe how, jeez,
you know,
unbelievable.
If the Cubs hadn't done so well last year as a setup for this year, I'd say there's something really funky about 2016. It can't be just the campaign. But, yeah, we sort of expected success, but they keep coming back and keep rolling. They're going to be tough to stop. Yeah, for sure.
Well, they are. I have, you know, of course, in Ohio, we've got the Indians that are still hanging on to first, but the Reds just get killed because one of the problems that you don't have in Chicago is these small market teams, you know, really can't compete because they don't have the television revenues. And I think it's crazy. You know, you look at the NBA and they spread the money out. You look at the NFL and every city's competitive. Baseball's in enough trouble, and their inability to make sure that there's a level playing field. Why don't they just have Chicago, L.A., New York, Atlanta, and just tell the rest of the country to forget it? Don't play baseball because, you know, it's just outrageous.
Well, the way to balance it out is not the way they've done it for sure, because they'd make the argument they have, and frankly, they haven't. That's why it's smaller and right up the road. Exactly. Milwaukee's been crushed for years.
Yeah, it's not fair, and I think baseball's got, I mean, I don't know. They say that, you know, good attendance and all that, they're making money. And I guess that's all that matters there, but I don't know how they continue to do it because you can't lose the middle of America, right? Kansas City. Now, that doesn't mean you can't win. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't put a great team together, but whenever your athletes get to be really great, they leave. You have to have them leave because you can't pay them, and you got to get something for them before they leave. You know, it's just, to me, it seems nuts. You know, it's just not good.
Well, you need to put it on your list.
I got that off my chest.
You need to put that on the list of things you're going to fix when you leave.
One other thing. Can I say one other thing? I'm getting so excited, getting ready to watch those Olympics with my daughters and my wife. And, you know, I know it's taking a lot of heat. There's probably going to be a little trouble down there. But, God, I just love the Olympics. These great athletes, and I think it's fantastic. So,
well, see, one of the reasons I like Governor Kasich is Governor Kasich, he's a tough guy. And he'll tell you what he thinks. But he also has a positive vision about things, because I'm not all that positive. I love the Olympics, too. I grew up on the Olympics. But I'm not all that positive this time around, and now I'm getting more excited because Governor Kasich's getting excited. So what do you think what do you think about how much damage Trump is going to do to the rest of the ticket? What do you want to say to Republicans in particular and others about voting down ballot if you're not happy with what's on top?
Well, look, I mean, you know, when you think about Hillary's nothing more than top-down, more bureaucracy, more government, and this is the 21st century. And, you know, you can't run anything that way. Now, that doesn't mean we don't need government, but government needs to be significantly reformed You know, our schools need to be reformed. Does anybody understands that? It's people that live in Chicago. Our whole welfare system needs to be reformed. The problem is the people who are the liberals want to keep adding more to a system that's already broken. So it is absolutely vital, in my opinion, that there that if she were to win, that there is a big check on her, which involves the United States Senate and the United States House. So, and, you know, then you get even to, into the local level. So, look, I'm traveling around. I'll be in for, of course, I'm getting ready to fly in for Mark Kirk. I'll be doing some things for some Republicans tonight, the minority leader of the House, Durkin. And, you know, I just think it's critical. That's why I'm traveling. I was just in Philadelphia and now Chicago. It's a nice, it's a pretty nice tour, isn't it? But, you know, I have to give the whole day up, and that's okay, because I think Kirk's, you know, he's a good man.
But, Governor, you're not supporting Donald Trump, though, are you?
I think you all know what I've been doing about that. I don't think we need to dwell on it.
Yeah, but we're not going to play. He went from a good mood to a bad mood so quickly. We're not going to play charades either.
I'm not in a bad mood. Everybody knows. You have to be living in a cave to not know, you know, where I've been on all this. So.
You know what, though? I appreciate your Twitter feed, because I follow you on Twitter as well, and I have appreciated your tweets the past couple of days. It's almost like you're in damage control mode with the response to the Gold Star parents and then the one from day before yesterday, Republicans are lucky to have Paul Ryan and John McCain.
Well, look, I used to work with Paul. Paul actually was an aide to the Budget Committee when I was there, and he was a disciple of Jack Kemp. Now, maybe our listeners wouldn't know who Jack was.
Oh, sure they do.
Except he was, well, you know, he was a football player for the Buffalo Bills, and he got to be a congressman. And he was a very much a growth guy, very much a uniter, you know, whether they're minorities, whether they're the hardcore blue-collar workers. That's the mode that, and the mold out of which Paul Ryan operates. John McCain, I mean, I don't even think they ought to have an election. They ought to tell McCain, as long as you want to be in the Senate, you can have it.
Yep.
But he's just the greatest guy. And I've known John since 1982 when we both went into the Congress together, and I intend to go to Arizona and do everything I can. I'll either campaign for him or against him, whatever gets him the most votes.
Well, I do have to say this. I know McCain a little bit, and the part I know I couldn't agree with you more. Nobody cares more about this country than John McCain. And it's not just the people of Arizona. It's this country as a whole, in full. And I couldn't agree with
exactly.
you more.
McCain is a hero. You know, a hero. I mean, the guy sat in the Hanoi Hilton, was beaten because his father was an admiral. I mean, it's just, you know, but he never really talks much about that. But he's a hero. We have to reward people like that. But he's been a great United States senator. And you know, we served in the House together. I just visited with John. He's just, the thing I really like about John McCain is he calls me Johnny. Nobody's called me Johnny since my mother has left the earth. And he gets, Johnny, we got to get together. I love it.
Hey, before I let you fly, Johnson and Weld, governors who you know just for the fact that all governors know each other. Any thoughts on them?
Well, I don't know Johnson really. You might have met him or whatever. Bill Weld is been a longtime friend of mine. And, you know, I think they were on TV last night. Somebody
right.
told me I didn't have a chance to see them. But, look, we got a long way to Tipperary here, and everybody's going to have to figure out what they want to do.
All right. I'll figure out where Tipperary is. Governor Kasich, you're always welcome here. I appreciate your time.
You know what? You guys are great. How is everything in Chicago?
You know, it's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. You look out this window, you see Americans walking up and down Michigan Avenue, and they're smiling. And all I want from them is involvement in the process. And at a time where politics has made more people apathetic, please get involved, stay involved, start with your PTA and the principal at your school. And
oh, that's right.
And work your way inside out.
One other thing that I wanted to tell you, something maybe you can talk about. You know, this drug problem in this country is such a terrible scourge. We have run a 360 program to try to prevent drugs, and we're actually, our deaths are up in Ohio because of this horrible thing called fentanyl, which they laced with heroin. It's very deadly. But we've also seen a significant drop in the number of prescribed opiates. In other words, when you go to the dentist and you get your wisdom teeth out, don't take a bunch of pain pills. You can get addicted. But here's what we're doing. We have our Ohio State Fair, and all across the state and all across the country, I'm asking people at these programs, at these fairs, at these baseball games, start telling kids to not do drugs. If a kid hears that they are, here's the message of an anti-drug, there is a 50% less likelihood they will do drugs. And it doesn't take much. So at the state fairs and the county fairs and the baseball games and sports coming to football games this fall, let's run the war against drugs. And it doesn't take a lot. Just get going on it. So if you guys every day can say, kids or mom and dad, if you're listening, tell your sons or daughters or grab a kid down the street and ask them not to do drugs so they don't destroy their life.
Yeah, parents. I mean, parents and grandparents. That's who we talk to every day. Parents and grandparents, this is a number one job for you. Keep your kids safe. This is part of it.
It really is. It can save your kid's life. So, hey, God bless you guys. I'll see you. We'll do it again, okay?
All right, safe travels, Governor. That's Governor John Kasich. And in lieu of the big story, we thought we'd have a conversation there with the governor. And we did. Bounced around to a lot of topics. A lot of different things. I love when you asked him about Trump, though, because a dark cloud suddenly flew into the room.
Yeah, right?
Hey, you know how I feel about Trump. No, we can't tell. So Governor Kasich is also one who, and whether you're in a cave or not, is deeply concerned about a future Trump world. So it's 9:36. Trump's been up for 3 hours. Has anything popped up that he said that's problematic?
Because
he's got a quota to fill.
No. Well, we have Paul Manafort coming out today saying that Trump already made amends with the Khan family.
Yeah, no, he
didn't. I didn't see that.
Yeah,
but,
no, he did.
But he also says that, of course he'll work with Paul Ryan if elected president.
Here's the problem. If he has gone 3.5 hours of awake time without saying something just jackass or stupid, he's going to have an afternoon like nobody's business. It's going to be a hurricane of stupid starting at noon.
All right.
So just you've been warned.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Credit cards company's like, okay, you want to play with us? We'll play with you. Okay, the minimum payment now goes from 2% minimum payment to 4%.
Seems pretty upset.
Okay, so now you got a person that's barely hanging on, $20,000 to $30,000 with credit card debt at 2% is $400 to $600, right? It's manageable.
It's so angry.
Now you just, what do these morons do? They turn it into $800 to $1,200 a month. Who the hell can afford that?
Stop yelling at me.
This is so what do they have to do? They have to go out and take out another credit card to pay the credit cards off.
I promise you, I don't look for his fuse and light it. I really don't.
Take it easy, champ.
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
It's always great. David Ockberg, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me.
How'd the seminar go?
We had so many people, we had to roll them into the spillover room.
Nice.
Yeah, we had close to 200 people. It was our largest event at that location in Oak Brook Terrace. So, we're looking to do two more events, one in September, actually three more events, one on college planning. In September, we're going to do a home buying seminar. We haven't done one of those in a while. And I've teamed up with Gilda's Club to do a credit enhancement seminar for cancer survivors.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, we're going to do it right over there on at 537 Wells with the red door on Wells Street. Because I met Jolinda, the executive director in the green room. And we just became friends and had her on my show, and we went over there, and now we're the, I guess, quote-unquote, unofficial mortgage company.
I can't decide if I'm good for you or I cost you lots of money, because it seems like every time I introduce you to somebody, because you got a big heart, you end up giving them lots of money.
Yeah, I try not to sit in the green room for more than 30 seconds, because you're usually rolling somebody in there from a charity that's costing money. And real quick, I am meeting today, since you just talked about the reverse mortgage, I'm meeting today with a gentleman that lives in the North Shore. He's 82. His wife's 81. They live in a $700,000 home, free and clear.
Good.
He showed
That's
me
a good story so it's far.
So far, he showed me his Merrill Lynch statement of his assets that went from $1 million to $800,000 to $600,000 to $400,000 to $300,000 to now $120,000. That's all he's got left, and he was battling with the benefits of a reverse mortgage. Went to somebody else first. Wanted to charge him over $5,000 in closing costs. He's coming to me today at 4 o'clock at our office up in Deerfield, and I'm going to talk to him about taking out a, I think it was like a $330,000 reverse mortgage that he could take out tax-free. We will cover all of the closing costs, and he'll be able to not cannibalize his $125,000 he has left in his Merrill Lynch account.
Can you get him out of the Merrill Lynch account that's down to 80%?
Well, he's been it's not that it's taking a shot. He's been using it, and you know, to live off it, and he's doing what he's supposed to do. He's taking trips.
Oh, so it's not the investments.
No, it's not that he's got. No, I don't need Merrill Lynch calling me.
This is the worst investment advice I've ever heard.
I'm not knocking Merrill Lynch. Please, I don't need attorneys calling me. I got enough with that. But I'm just saying, he's been living off it, and it's been going down, 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 and now he's down to like 100.
So this is his bank.
This is it. He's got 125 G's left in Merrill Lynch, and he's living in a $600,000-$700,000 home. So guess what? And he's got Social Security and a pension and some other things coming in, and they're in their 80s. So the best option, top five options, reverse mortgage, and look at the other two that I just said.
Because I want to get to this, but yeah. What's the number one thing that people say, yeah, but when it comes to a reverse mortgage?
It's too expensive. But if you take out $100,000 when you close a loan, we cover all your closing costs. And the number two thing is, I want to leave something for my kids. And my response is, okay, then have your kids start funneling $3,000 to $5,000 a month to you so you could survive. So you're not living off of, worrying about what you're going to do and not paying your real estate taxes, you know, living off of cat food, living off of tuna fish, which could be considered cat food, you know, just not enjoying life. And just like pigeonholing yourself.
It's your house. It's your house. And the fact is, people shouldn't put it in a box. It's a desperate move. It's not a desperate move. It's a smart financial move.
You paid it off. It's an asset.
You've earned it.
It's a liquidity asset there that you could tap out to live. There's nothing wrong with it. And thank God Congress finally got their heads out of their wahoos and passed a bill. Hopefully it's good. President Obama will sign it to redo all the condo laws to get FHA approval in condos and make it a lot easier.
Right.
That they basically locked it down in 2009, 2010, that seniors that are living, experienced homeowners that are living in condos for the past 10, 20 years that have got it paid off can't get reverse mortgages in condos because of these ridiculous condo approval rules with FHA. So thank God it's finally going through Congress, and thank Congressman Dold up in the 10th District for his help in getting that through.
There are people every day that you come in touch with at Pearl Mortgage, David Hochberg's here, that are really well-intentioned folks.
Yes.
And they think calling you and making the appointment and having a good appointment with you is great. Now we're going to go out and celebrate, and we're going to change 19 things about my life, and I'm going to spend a little money to celebrate.
Right.
So let's hit on a couple of these.
Yeah.
These are don'ts. These are don'ts to do when applying for a mortgage.
Or if you're thinking about applying for a mortgage.
Okay.
Right.
So even if you're in the think phase.
If you're in the think phase, these are not good things to do.
Maybe we should ask him these questions like, hey, David, should we buy a brand new car when I'm applying for a mortgage?
No, because then he'll yell again.
Yeah.
Don't change jobs, become self-employed, or quit your job. Be job stable.
Be job stable. You know, I had a couple of people recently got mad at us because we didn't tell them to stay at their job. So what we did was we created a top 10 don't list that everybody gets when they apply for a mortgage with us, saying these are the 10 things you don't do. Don't change your job and become self-employed. Okay, I really wanted to open up. I was talking to Steve Grzanich about this morning. I really wanted to open up that oil changing thing. Great. You know what? Let us refinance you in 30 days and then go open up, start a franchise, and leave your $100,000 a year job to go change somebody's oil. Okay?
Because the bank might look at you as unstable for not being job stable.
Because you just left a W-2 paying job that you're getting a paycheck every other week into a job that you're now self-employed that have no experience with.
You have no tax return. Listen, we got a few of these. You're going to hurt yourself.
Okay, sorry.
What was the one you just said?
Buying a car. David, should I buy a brand new car or make a big purchase?
Yeah.
You know, like a boat or a yacht before I refinance?
Or how about this? How about buy a house? House hasn't closed yet, but you run into a big box store and buy $60,000 worth of furniture, which we've had before. Okay? It's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Well, it takes 6 to 8 weeks for the furniture to be delivered. I'm like, don't you have a couch now? Yeah, but we're moving into a house. So what happens? $60,000, you have a credit inquiry, you get $60,000 worth of credit card on a furniture, that's $2,400 a month minimum payment. Guess what? It completely screws up your ratio, drops your credit scores down, and could disqualify you from buying the house. Now you got a whole house full of furniture with no house to put the furniture in.
By the way, we just covered number three, so let's move to number four.
Sorry.
Don't spend money that's been set aside for your closing.
Yeah. Okay. You know,
listen, on a refinance, there's a lot of opportunities for us to cover closing costs by putting you into a slightly higher rate, okay? What people do is like, oh, yeah, we need $5,000 for closing, all right? And then they put it aside. Then they're like, okay, well, the loan's approved, and we could go spend the money. No, loan's approved. You haven't closed the loan yet.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, great, the loan's approved. You need the $5,000 for title, attorney's fees, the rest of your down payment. Oh, well, I had to go do this. Well, guess what? Now we have to wait until you get another money in there to close the loan.
The number five is one of my favorites. Don't omit debts or liabilities from your loan application.
Yeah.
Oh, David. Hey, I forgot to tell you. I owe Knuckles $80,000 for last year's fantasy football season.
Yeah. Yeah, this falls into the I have a condo or I have a home in Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin, Florida, Arizona. It's paid off. I don't think I have to tell you.
That doesn't count, does
it? No, that doesn't count. Okay, no, we have to do what's called a title search against you, and all of a sudden we find this property. Now what do we have to count? We have to count the real estate taxes, and we have to count the assessments. We have to count the homeowner's insurance. If it's a condo, we have to count the assessments. So don't lie to your loan officer. Because it comes
everything
back.
Counts.
We're going to find it.
If it's a financial transaction outside of buying Starburst for Sandberg,
right.
Everything counts.
Right. They'll find the Pier 1 card that you opened 15 years ago and didn't pay the charge that you made on it.
Yeah.
Not that that happened to
speaking
me.
Not that you're speaking from experience.
We'll come back and hit some of these top five as well. If people want a copy of the mortgage advice don'ts, can they just get a hold of you?
Yes, you could send me. You could go to WGN David and send me an email. We'll shoot out the PDF to you. And also, I'm at 1,675 likes, and I'm a very, very...
needy.
I'm a needy person.
You like to be liked.
And my goal is 2,000. Somebody said that this Facebook thing is good for you and it's supposed to take off eventually. So yeah.
Was that Ross?
Yeah. Ross told me you got to get your likes up. Yeah. Okay. Thanks to you. So go to David Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage and like me, please, so I could get my likes up so I get Ross off my back and so stop talking about my
It makes sense, yet if we had this conversation 5 years ago, how pathetic would it have sounded?
You know, we could have this conversation. It still sounds pathetic.
No. People need to like you, David, and I don't know why they wouldn't. You're so even-tempered. We're back with more Hochberg in a moment on 720 WGN. A couple minutes before 10, and Bill O'Winnie in just a second. We don't have time to finish the top 10 don'ts when applying for a mortgage, but you can get your copy at WGNDavid.com. I do have a question on one of them, though. Which is interesting to me, David Hochberg. Don't change banks.
Yeah, don't change banks. It's very important not to change banks because when we verify a bank, pick a bank, Chase Manhattan Bank, the funds from your closing have to come from Chase Manhattan Bank. So we've had a couple of people lately take the money from Chase and put it into Bank of America, okay? And
after the loan has been sealed.
After the loan's been approved with the funds that we verified
prior
bank
to closing.
From Chase Manhattan Bank. Now you take the money for some reason and put it into Bank of America or to Fifth Third or whatever, and all of a sudden a check for the closing or a wire from the closing comes from Bank of America, which we didn't verify any of the funds.
Right.
So now what we tell people is the money right up front. When you're closing an account, when you're closing a loan, we need the funds from a bank where we verified the funds. Even though you might have depleted the funds from that account and you have money at another bank, take the money from the other bank, put it into the account right before the closing because those are the funds that we verified.
Consistency.
You need consistency.
I have one, Steve. Don't change dry cleaners. Did you know
that's
you're not supposed
huge.
To change
dry
cleaners?
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Because right? You could lose your shirt ties and you don't want to go to
Speaking
closing.
Speaking of that, don't change your clothes.
Don't change your clothes.
Don't change your clothes from the time the loan is finalized
don't
to the time
shower.
It closes.
Don't change your mind.
Right.
They
right.
say not to change your mind about it.
That would be
that.
Helpful.
Right?
Don't change your mind.
That I did not know.
Yeah.
David Hochberg, how do we get a hold of you?
Very simple. WGNDavid.com, 312-751-1333. And your son is in the process of going through the licensing process right now. And by the end of August, no pressure, Ross, he will pass the test and be licensed as a mortgage loan originator.
Won't that be something?
That would be great.
Big ceremony. They'll have
a
big ceremony.
He's doing a phenomenal job. Yep.
I got to tell you, between his mother and Amy and him, there's a lot of people in that family that are getting stuff done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
almost everybody.
There's some folks in my family that are accomplishing
things.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on.
It's fun to watch them.
Yeah, it's good.
I would imagine.